Okay, test, test. I think we're about ready to get started. Are we ready to go? Okay. Well, you know what? I think before we even call the meeting to order, we do the prayer of the pledge. We just sing, Gene, happy birthday. We might as well, we were just talking about it. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Gene. Happy birthday to you.
And many more. 2 years in a row. Yeah. Mine was last year, too, on council night.
Really?
Because they observed yesterday as the 4th. So nowhere I'd rather be than with you all.
So Mayor, if you're going to share a happy birthday, we're out by 9 o'clock.
Let's do it.
8:30.
Okay. We're on. Well, I want to thank Craig Hansen for coming tonight and opening us in prayer. And Craig, I just want to say thank you, that you're here every Tuesday at noon, that you pray with others on Tuesdays for our city and for the elected officials of our entire community. Thank you so much for your leadership, and thank you for that prayer. So we'll let you come forward, open us in prayer, and the pledge. Let's do prayer first.
All right, we'll do that. Thank you, Mayor. And I do want to just share a quick scripture, I promise. And, you know, one of the things I will just say is I don't call it spirit, but the levity that is here tonight amongst everybody just joking around, that's a good thing to see in our city leaders. They enjoy being here, and I hope that one of the individuals out here can have that same kind of heart and attitude tonight. So here's this quick scripture, I promise. Yet in all things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present nor things to come, nor height nor depth, nor any created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. And I think that's why we have joy, is because of the love of Christ that we can share with one another. So let's pray. Dear Lord God, I thank you so much for this council and for the mayor, for their leadership. And as Lord God, they seek proper direction. And dear Lord God, making proper decisions that will benefit the citizens of Nampa, may you guide them, direct them. And Lord God, I thank you again for the lightheartedness that they have tonight. And I pray that that will continue even as they work hard to accomplish the business of the city. May they, dear Lord God, trust in you, because you will not separate them from your love. And that is the same for everyone in our city. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So I appreciate Pastor Craig's comments, and that, you know what, I've said it before, but I'll say it again. I so appreciate the fact that as leaders, the council members, and the same is true of our employees, we don't always agree, but we respect one another, and we can disagree respectfully and enjoy working together. And so it is a wonderful thing, and that the same is true of our staff. So how we treat one another is with respect and honor, and but we also speak truth, and that's important. So I appreciated those comments. And with that, we'll get started, and we'll start with roll call.
Rodriguez?
Here.
Bruner?
Here.
Mutchie?
Here.
Levi?
Present.
Haverfield?
Here.
Bauer?
Here.
I am not aware of any proposed amendments to the agenda. Is anyone else aware of any proposed amendments tonight? Seeing none, I stand for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Mutchie?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
The next item on the agenda are proclamations, and we have two proclamations. The first one is our Snake River Stampede Days proclamation, And I'll do that one first. And unfortunately, tonight is a Snake River board, Sanctity board meeting, so they are busy working on the details of the rodeo, so they're unable to be here, but we didn't want to miss the opportunity to read the proclamation. Whereas in 1915, the first Nampa Harvest Festival, also known as Snake River Stampede, kicked off the first rodeo event. And whereas since that date in 1915, the Snake River Stampede Rodeo has become one of the premier rodeos in the state of Idaho in the United States. And whereas the Snake River Stampede attracts over 60,000 spectators each year from across the state and around the world that enjoy rodeo in Nampa, Idaho. And whereas the Snake River Stampede is considered as one of the top PRCA indoor rodeos in the nation. And whereas our community gets to observe over 700 world-ranking contestants competing for over $450,000 in prize money. Whereas the rodeo is celebrating the 160th year as the wildest, fastest show on earth. Now, therefore, I, Debbie Clay, Mayor of the City of Nampa, Idaho, do hereby proclaim July 12th through the 24th in the City of Nampa as Snake River Stampede Days. We encourage our citizens to promote the exciting community celebration and to wear Western apparel. So I need to remind employees the week of the Stampede, we need to wear jeans and cowboy boots. So I look forward to that. So, what's that?
Not skinny jeans.
No. Bootcut jeans with cowboy boots. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, I'm excited. You know what? We have an amazing rodeo. What are you smiling at? I missed that joke over there.
Well, they said, no skinny cut jeans. I thought, oh boy, he didn't see me in that. No way, man.
Our other proclamation this evening, and Darren, I'm not sure who's going to actually come forward. Jennifer is. So, you know what? I can read the proclamation unless you would like the honor of reading it. Okay, so I'll read it and then I'll hand it to you. So, it is Parks and Recreation Month. And whereas parks and recreation programs are an integral part of communities across this country, including Nampa, and whereas... There we go. Whereas our parks and recreation are vitally important to establishing and maintaining the quality of life in our communities, ensuring the health of all citizens, and contributing to the economic and environmental well-being of our community and region. And whereas parks and recreation programs build healthy, active communities that aid in the prevention of chronic disease, provide therapeutic recreation services for those who are mentally or physically disabled, and they improve the mental and emotional health of our citizens. And whereas the parks and rec programs increase the community's economic prosperity through increased property values, expansion of the local tax base, increased tourism, the attraction and retention of businesses, and crime reduction. And whereas parks and recreation areas are fundamental to the environmental well-being of our community. And whereas parks and natural recreation areas improve water quality, protect ground cover, prevent flooding, improve the quality of air we breathe, provide vegetative buffers to development, and produce habitat for wildlife. Whereas our parks and natural recreation areas ensure the ecological beauty of our community and provide a place for children and adults to connect with nature and recreate outdoors. And whereas the U.S. House of Representatives has designated July as Parks and Recreation Month, Nampa therefore recognizes the benefits derived from parks and recreation resources. Now therefore, I, Debbie Clay, Mayor of the City of Nampa, do hereby proclaim July 2021 to be Parks and Recreation Month. Jennifer, do you have something you'd like to share with us? And I'll give you the official proclamation.
Yeah.
And I appreciate our team here. Courtney's here, Darren. Do we have anybody else here from Parks? I don't think so. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you for reading that. Thank you for declaring July as National Parks and Recreation, Mayor and City Council. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. This proclamation is an initiative of the National Parks and Recreation Association to celebrate and acknowledge all the ways that Parks and Recreation has the power to transform our daily lives. From providing us places to play, get fit, and stay healthy, to fostering new relationships and forging a connection with nature. Our close-to-home community park and recreation facilities provide essential services and improve our quality of life. Nampa Parks and Recreation Facilities are a place where people can gather and participate in wholesome activities and have fun. By increasing our awareness of parks and recreation amenities and programs in Yampa, play and activity will increase, ultimately leading to a healthier community. We strive to provide amenities that will encourage people to get active, create community, and make Yampa a great place to live. This year, Yampa Parks and Recreation is offering pop-up giveaways throughout the month to celebrate July as National Parks and Rec Month. The goal is to highlight some of our great programs and amenities available through Yampa Parks and Recreation. Our first pop-up event will be this Thursday during our traveling playground at Sunset Oaks Park and Maplewood Park. We'll be handing out free goodie bags to the kids who come out to the park to join the traveling playground. For those of you who don't know, the traveling playground is a great program that we offer every summer. We go to area parks in Yampa and run organized play with the kids in the community. The goal is to meet kids that may not have the ability to access transportation for programming throughout the summer. We also work in conjunction with the Summer Oasis feeding program so kids who come out to the park have free lunch and then join us for organized play. We're excited to highlight this great program as well as other pop-ups throughout the month. We also have some great, exciting projects that are taking place throughout the park system coming up very soon. An outdoor gym is currently being installed at Maple Grove Park. A large playground is just weeks away from opening at Grant Park, and we are in the planning phase of a second dog park in Yampa. Thank you for allowing me to share it. Do you have any questions or comments?
I would just like to say thank you. You know, what you're doing with those little pop-up parks and the traveling playground is incredible. It's needed. It's important. Thank you for the vision and the work that you guys do that make our whole park system really something treasured in our communities. I just really appreciate the work. Thank you. And I tell you one thing that we may not all know, the longevity of staff. When I was visiting the other day with this team, I was listening to how long many of them have been with the city and the great work that they do and how much they're appreciated by all the people that work with them in their various areas. And it's pretty cool. I'm really proud of you guys and the great work that you do and the team that you have. And so thank you for everything.
Thank you. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you. So the next item on our agenda is the Yampa residents wishing to speak on an agenda or non-agenda item. Do we have anyone signed up, Debbie?
Margie Potter.
Hi, Margie. Yes, of course, and that's a good thing. Welcome. Go ahead and say your name and address for the record.
Margie Potter with the Salvation Army at 403 12th Avenue South. And nothing bad tonight, but Mary, you kind of took my thunder away. Good. I just wanted to say to you and to council and the city staff how great you guys have been working with agencies and people that are concerned about, you know, the housing situation in our community in Yampa, and how we don't always agree on everything, but we are always willing to talk about it. You guys all came, we invited every council member, I'm still going to talk to you, to come out and just hear us out and see kind of what the problems are. And every single one of you was willing to, you know, answered right back and was willing to come out and talk to several of the agencies and, you know, people in our community, like the school district and Salvation Army and Catch and places like that. And the planning and zoning has been awesome. They invited us, or we explained some things to us, and we kind of told them some of our concerns as well. You know, sometimes I hate saying the media because it's not all bad, but they don't hear all the story. They don't hear that we are working things out that kind of leans on one side, like, you know, it's us against them. And I don't feel like that. It's here in our city. I feel like everybody's willing to work together. But we do have a problem, and we do need to do something about it. And I'm going to keep coming up and saying something about it every time. And I do want to acknowledge that this council has given some support to the shelter that's allowed us to stay open, the community family shelter that's allowed us to stay open So it'll be like the beginning of 2023, which gives us some time to get our feet under us to find some other means of keeping that open. And we're just about ready to open all the rooms full, because we were half the rooms were open because of COVID. So, but now we're ready to open them up fully with the direction of Southwest District Health. So I just want to thank you guys for working together, and especially you, I want, Mayor, because you have spoken out a few times and not always gotten the best reception from the audience, and that's got to be super hard, but I respect you for that. So I respect all of you. Thanks.
And I will have that meeting.
Yes, we will.
I will have that. I appreciate that. I appreciate the work of the Salvation Army. And I tell you what, the fact that that family shelter is open year-round is really, really important to this community. And it's wonderful that we've had the funding, and it was through the COVID funding that we've been able to have it open, but we need to support it being open all year-round, all the time, because the need is great for families. So that's definitely an important issue, besides affordable housing. Is there anyone else that had intended to speak tonight that did not get signed up? Seeing no one, the next item on the agenda is Mayor and Council comments, and I just wanted to bring up the subject because of the 4th of July weekend, and we had an amazing amount of fireworks going on in our community, and you know what, it's a wonderful opportunity to celebrate our country and Independence Day. One of the challenges that sometimes I face are when citizens Facebook us and comment on the fact that we're not enforcing our laws and or our local ordinance on not shooting off aerial fireworks. And so I ask both for the police an update, which Eric Scotland was able to get, but I also was thinking about what do we do as we look to the future. And it's not that I'm opposed, it's just that when you don't enforce what's on your books, what do you do with that? Because people look to us because it is an ordinance, and they look to us to enforce our local ordinances. So one of the things that we did, and this council all agreed to do 2 years ago, was actually go to the legislature and ask them to define what an illegal firework is. And Kirk, you can come up and speak to this rather than me, and we'll try to be brief, but I think this is an opportunity that I really would like to ask us to decide, do we want to do this again and go back? Because really, I think it's part of the issue. So Kirk, I'll let you, yeah. You and I spoke, I'll let you go.
You bet. Yeah. Thank you, Mayor and Council. The Mayor and I did speak earlier today, and across the state for the first time that I'm aware of, we did have fire departments that banned the use of fireworks in their districts. Up in Lewiston, which it was happening across the river in Washington, and so everyone that was going to be lighting in Washington that no longer here was planning on coming to Lewiston to light their illegal fireworks, and so the Lewiston Fire Chief made the decision to ban all fireworks in that city. And so I'm sure as we read those stories in the news, we see reactions, some out of fear and some out of our own beliefs. We did 2 years ago as a group, both as the fire department and as council and mayor, try to get more definition to the state law as to what is illegal and why they're being allowed to be sold in Idaho. We do know that a person buying illegal fireworks does sign a waiver stating they will not light those fireworks in the state of Idaho and that they could be held accountable for those damages. So that was received by the legislature committee that was sent but was never read. And we thought about trying again this year. However, there is really no traction in it. It's something that's been tried over and over again by fire departments throughout the state for years. And until we get real good definition at the state level, whether it's for policing or from the fire side, there is no traction in holding someone accountable for purchasing them and then lighting them in the state. It becomes even more difficult when we see state leaders themselves using these illegal fireworks and saying that we should be celebrating our freedoms with these. So honestly, I would say that I'm now on Chief Joe Huff's side, and that we need this to be taken at a state level That it is very difficult for proactive, safe communities such as NAMPA to enforce something that's not being enforced at the highest level within our state. So a quick report from us, we did have a very busy weekend with the heat. We responded to over 110 calls in the 48 hours of our holiday weekend. At multiple times had all of our apparatus out, and at one point had two structure fires going at the same time. Some of those still under investigation, but it was our crews did a very good job, as well as I know that Eric is going to give an update on what they saw. It was a busy weekend in the city of Nampa. And I would also agree, it was pretty amazing the amount of fireworks that were going on. They are beautiful, but until we have a better rule in place at a higher level, we're going to continue to get community members that don't think we're enforcing, but it's really we're unable to enforce until it's better defined and held at a state level. It would just be NAMPA, pulling their residents out specifically and everybody else in the state being allowed to still use them. And that would be a very difficult position to be. So, yeah, we just have to decide, are we going to continue at a state level to try and make a change across our state? There's so many options that we could do, whether it's make them legal and put rules on how they're to be used and the insurances that you must carry if you're going to buy them. Make them through permit. Make them take classes on how to use them properly and have the permit as they're using them. So when they are policed, they can show that they're allowed to use them. So it doesn't mean that we can't create a pathway to where they can still be used to celebrate our freedoms. It just needs to be done at a higher level than just this council, because it would be difficult to enforce.
Okay. Thank you for that.
May
yes.
May I ask Chief?
Yes, and then we'll have Eric Scolan come and just share the updates.
Thank you. I do have a few questions, Chief. At the beginning, you said some of the fire departments banned the use of fireworks. What jurisdiction or authority do they have to do that?
So they do have authority within that fire district to ban, due to the current conditions, weather conditions, especially in Lewiston. They were very fearful of the type of emergency it would create if it was to go poorly. So they do would be the fire authority's right as the fire authority in that district. And for city of Lewiston, it's within the city, so the fire chief is that fire authority. For here, when we become a district, it would probably lie more under Patrick and Ron working together within our agreement, because we won't have necessarily the ordinance authority, but as the agreed upon fire authority, he can make that call to ban. I'm sure it wasn't taken very, it probably wasn't liked very much to make that call.
Thank you. And you read my mind. I was going to kind of flesh that out as far as between the fire district and the city fire department. The next thing would be when we 2 years ago decided to go to the state legislature and ask them to define what illegal fireworks were, et cetera. Is there someone like a fire marshal, state fire marshal, that makes that determination as to whether they're going to be banned, whether they're going to, or was it just solely the legislature did not look at it?
Yeah, they didn't look at it. We were really trying to follow Arizona, which has a really good description of what is illegal. We were just trying to define these are the legal types of fireworks in the state of Idaho, because it just says illegal fireworks in the code. And so we were trying to get them to define what is illegal. And so that was our first effort. And I would have to ask Ron, is it under the fire marshal's purview? For fireworks, I think it's under the state legislature that was defined.
And is that 110 calls, is that higher than normal?
It's not the highest we've ever seen, but it is higher than normal, yes.
Do you think some of that had to do with the celebration after 18 months of being locked up and celebrating our country because of the status of stuff?
I would repeat, mayors, I saw a lot more fireworks this year than I've seen in the past. So. Those are all calls. So those are everything from emergency medical calls to fire calls, everything from grass to home fire. So just in that 36 hours from 8 o'clock Saturday morning until a little after midnight on Sunday, we saw 110 calls, which we probably averaged about 30-some calls a day. So it was almost double what our normal call volume is.
So my final comment, and maybe this goes to the police department, so I'm all about educating people. Instead of doing something first, let's educate them. So when those calls come in or the fires happen or whatever,
and you had disgruntled people that are saying, "We'll see if they didn't have the illegal fireworks." Do your firefighters and perhaps the police department, do they reach out to these people and allow them to understand it is not something we can control right now within the city? We have been trying to get the definition, et cetera.
Yeah, and I think with each one of the phone calls we receive, we have to explain that often, that it is something that is unenforceable at the city level. In the city, within the city, we've created a space where illegal fireworks cannot be sold. Those are being sold in the county, and we can't control that. And if they're being brought into the city and used, that's against the waiver that that citizen signed. So enforcement really then comes down to people having the resources to do so. And all I can tell you from the fire department standpoint, we had to bring in extra people to run extra apparatus, and those at certain points, those were all being used at the same time. Meridian actually had to not turn us down, but request that we not use their assistance because they were also out of apparatus at the same time. So we had one available engine between Meridian and Nampa at certain points during the 4th of July celebration. That's worrisome as an organization that protects the community. So next year we'll up our game even more and possibly put more apparatus. And we were trying to, obviously we're in a pretty critical state. As we transfer over, we're trying to be as fiscally responsible as we can be. So we looked at our call volume and identified a very specific time that we would need extra people, and we tailored it to that. It worked very well, but we probably could have added more if we actually we should have probably added more because we ran out. So,
well, thank you for the information and your time.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Hello.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. So the police department, I'll just go through a few statistics. We do modify our response because we do have a large volume of calls to us on fireworks each year. So going into this, we basically, when we do get calls, we will post that so officers can see where those calls are coming in from. But we generally don't respond to calls unless it's reported as some dangerous type of usage. So it's being shot toward a house or shot at people or things like that with those types of fireworks. We recognize, as the fire chief said, there are a lot of illegal fireworks, I guess as you would characterize them, that do get sold and purchased and then discharged in the city. So it's a challenge to try and enforce all of that activity. So that's why our plan is the way it is. And this just gives you a little bit of an idea of some of our calls for service. So we had 117 reports of fireworks calls between July 3rd and July 5th, which is down a little bit from last year, but our 911 calls during that same period of time were up. We had 465 911 calls compared to 352 last year, so up over 100 for 911 calls. And our general overall calls for service during that same period were up slightly at 1,346 during those 3 days. So that gives you a little bit of an idea. It was 1,320 last year, so roughly the same, but just a little bit. But I'll stand for any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, Council, I just wanted to just broach the subject. At some point, we'll come back maybe before a legislative session, and I think it would be helpful if the state would just define what an illegal firework is, and then we as a city, it just helps with our communication and what our response to that is. So I don't want to impede on anyone's fun, although we do get contacted by citizens asking why we don't enforce. So with that, unless there's further comment, we'll move on. Are there any comments from council?
Mayor, just real quick, I thank Patrick already. Not that these petitions are gone. Thank you so very much. And Councilwoman Levi, I was out of town, but thank you for all your work with the God and Country Rally. I know it was hot and challenging, but thank you and Dave Ferdinand and all the team there. Mm-hmm. So appreciate you, and hopefully you know that the crowd I heard was minimal because of the heat, that will continue this on and on and on. So very important. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Yes, over the last year, this council has had to take care of many obstacles in terms of apartment complexes. We've had the community uproar, and we've had a lot of them in favor of. And so I think the way that this council has had their hands tied because of the ordinances and because of the locations and the need for apartment complexes, it's important that I think that we set a good direction of where we want to go as a city in terms of apartment complexes. We turn some down, but then again, we approve others. So as a developer and a contractor, if I was in your boat, and I would be wanting to build here in Nampa, not knowing what this council is going to do, or not knowing the direction the council would take after they're investing all this money and time and effort, that it would be a coin tossed up in the air. And I think we deserve more than that as a community. If we could, just an idea, council and mayor, and to our community, if we could just think about where we're headed here. And one example would be, if we used to put in our ordinances or our zones where apartment complexes would be easier, viable, and more cost-effective to our developers and to our community. Because right now, we're at a crisis with our homes, and crisis with our homes when they're brand new homes are $450,000. No one can buy those. But unfortunately, that's the way it is. So the opportunity is for apartment complexes to come forward and give the people a place to reside. There's not a one of us in here on this council that says that we don't believe that we need to have people here. We need to have services for them and a place to live. We need that. But at what expense? At what expense do we portray ourselves as being community leaders and actually are hand-tied because of our ordinances and zones? We do need apartment complexes, but we need them in different structured zones so where the people know where they could be. And you also know where the developers could have an idea. If it's an approved area in the zone, then there's no doubt what it would pass. If now, so we've had the community actually an uproar over a lot of the residential subdivisions, that's a tough call for us because those are in our community. We've been asking them for help. All these last terms that I've been in, we ask them to be to forthright to us and to give us information. But then when we pass and they never agree to it, what are we doing? What message are we sending to our community? Their voice matters to us. It matters to me. But it's economical for us to help each other. And so I want to just put that in your mind, Council and Mayor. Maybe you'd be thinking about changing things a little bit, maybe. But I want the community to know that we are trying. Our best foot effort is to give everyone a chance to live here in Nampa, but not make it where it intrudes on other homeowners. And at times it has to, yes, I know that. But I'm really concerned, and I want to make that perfectly clear that I support giving people a place to live who can't afford it. And I hope we can do something. Thank you, Mayor.
Richard, thank you for your comments. As I look at Rodney, I think the thing that's running through my head is that we just recently did finish our future land use map and our comprehensive plan, and we did redefine certain areas. And we're just in the process of changing a lot of our code regarding density and allowable uses. And so that will be coming before a public hearing soon. And that will be out there. And if we have an error in an area, I think sometimes we have projects come in allowable use that we deny. And that is difficult because it is in our future land use map. It is an allowable use. The council denies it, which makes it difficult for the developers, but we deny it because we're listening to the residents. And so those are very difficult things. And so I think both planning and zoning and city council has been part of the most recent code review and the changes that are coming forward. I'm not sure what the answer is with where we are today, because we have just recently taken a look. Rodney, you're welcome to respond with any comments, and then we'll move forward. But thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. I think the one thing we could do, and what staff is planning on, I think we heard in our workshops a desire to look at that future land use map again. And we are planning in the fall to do exactly that. We hope to cover all the code changes, and then we'll go back to City Council and Planning and Zoning in a workshop of some kind and relook at our future land use map. We've already started to draw on a big map and say, what could we do here? And it does come down to what you place on the zoning map specifically, but you start with the future land use map. And so that's a good first start, I think, and we can have an open discussion at that time. And then as developers or property owners come in and they request a zone, there are some zones, for instance, the RML and the RMH zones, that actually do outright permit an apartment to go into them. So if that's the direction that we place in the comprehensive plan, and that zone comes in for annexation and zoning or a rezone, then that is the way to ensure that, yes, they can build an apartment in that location. So I think it's just going to be an ongoing discussion, but specifically a workshop sometime in the fall.
Yes.
I appreciate this conversation. I don't know how many typical residents would look at a land use map and really understand it. So I almost wonder if another step would be to work with homeowners associations so that in the CCNRs they know what could come into that area when they purchase a home, because you do have to sign that you read your CCNRs. And so I wonder if we even work with them to make sure that you know that when you buy here, you could have multifamily apartments near you at some point. Because I do think we hear from the residents, and it's hard. I mean, it's really hard, but it puts us in a tough situation when it is an allowable use, and you have people investing the money, and then you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. So I wonder if there's another step we can take, Rodney. I don't know.
I guess I'd propose that Todd weigh in here on this.
Mayor and Council Member Sheehan and Rodney. So, I guess I always express a little caution in getting too far into the CCNR world as a city council. Technically, it's a private contract between the association and the property owners and the property owners themselves. You can perhaps require provisions in the CCNRs, but you don't want to be in the enforcement business of the CCNRs themselves. And then the associations typically also have the power, in accordance with their covenants, to amend them. So you need to be aware of that provision. So if you're going into that world, I guess you need to go into it with eyes open, and if it's a requirement that something be included, as long as you're not in the enforcement business, that would be my main advice there. And then otherwise, go into it cautiously and thoughtfully.
Thank you.
Mayor, one last comment there. I do want to point out, though, that we have tried to work with those HOAs. There's not neighborhood associations so much in the city of Nampa as there are in the city of Boise, for instance. They have funding that they dedicate to neighborhood associations, neighborhood, their conglomeration of a bunch of subdivisions. But each subdivision needs to register with the Secretary of State's office. And so we have a contact information for each subdivision, but a lot of times those are management companies, HOA management companies that cover multiple subdivisions. And it sometimes is very challenging to get the word out through that organization. We do our best, though, and when we did the future land use map, we do our best to contact them and involve them that way But I will say that it's challenging to get them involved.
Thanks for all your work and your team, Rodney.
Thank you, Rodney. Victor, thank you for bringing that up. It's a very good discussion. Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other council comments this evening? Okay, seeing none, we will move to our first agency report. And Jacob, I think, is this you tonight? That we have an Amplifier Protection District map fund, or Kirk, is he?
Yep.
It's you?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I told Councilman Bauer that I'd handle it, and then he can fix anything that I broke.
Okay.
So, Council Mayor, thank you again. So exciting things. We've done a lot of work, and what we are accomplishing as a city and as a district takes focus and collaboration and commitment to our citizens. And so first, just a bit of good news before we share the rest of the good news is I want to thank each of you for your trust in us, releasing the impact fees. I wanted to let you know that there is for the first time in 15 years, there's a signed contract that has been signed and enacted for Station 6 construction. And so as of last Tuesday afternoon, the work has begun, and we hope to open Station 6 in February of 2023. So that is pretty exciting for our community, and it was one of the main pieces as a council and as a commission that you promised, and we're following through as quickly as possible. So thank you for the trust. Thank you for letting us use those impact fees through the district, and we'll care for them greatly and make sure they go as far as we can make them go. As you're all aware, jointly the district and the council work together on our major acquisition purchases fund. That money is for the replacement of worn out equipment stations, and over the years we have diligently put money into that fund, and it has now come to a point where it's no longer going to be a joint coordinated effort, as the district will take ownership of all growth and future of the fire department. So we do have the money that both the city and district have put into there, and it had plans. And so we proposed a budget for the committee to consider. And really, we have three priority items that we looked at. And I did bring Chief Adams, who was running all three of these priority efforts, if you have any questions. Those efforts for us was the remodel of Station 1, the repair of the front ramp in front of Station 1, and then the replacement of the last apparatus that we own, which is our large ladder truck or platform at Station 1. It's the only one remaining that's over 10 years old. It happens that there isn't quite enough money in the MAP fund to do all three of those projects. However, commissioners being well aware, they knew that if the MAP fund committee would approve the funding of the Station 1 remodel and the front ramp, the remaining funds left in the MAP fund today would go towards the purchase of the platform, and all remaining funds would be covered through the district's budget. So that was the proposal. The breakdown basically is currently we have just under $1.9 million. Station 1 is just a little under $900,000 for a total remodel of the upstairs, as well as the infrastructure of the building. We were very pleased to get the report back that the bones of the building will serve us far, far into the future. And it is the best place for our main station as we continue to seek if there's better ways to do things. There's no doubt, and not only for us, but as you can see now, Canyon County also sees the value in its location, very central to serve our community. So the bones are good. We do need to update the pipes and the electrical, so that's going to happen. And then there will be all new living quarters upstairs that include kitchen, proper bathroom facilities for everyone. The laundry room will no longer be in the male bathroom where people have to go in and do their laundry. We'll have an actual laundry facility, and we'll bring that up to current. The second piece is the ramp out front. We've been working with engineers to provide not only just a new ramp, but our stormwater, take care of our stormwater. Currently, it goes into the gutter and into our city's system. We're going to be using a,
just lost the name.
Pervious pavers.
So ours will be taken care of through the ground and no longer part of the stormwater worry, which is pretty exciting. A lot of research done by Chief Adams and the engineers on that. And it's going to be one of the first of its kind. It's first of its kind in Tampa. And there are other examples, but we'll be an example of hopefully what the future is when handling stormwater. And then the last is the aerial apparatus. It came in at $1.3 million for the quick quote. We have about $800,000 remaining of the MAP fund, and we thought that with those being the three top priorities currently in our department, that those would be the three we requested, and the committee listened, had great questions for us, and then in the end approved those projects. So anything else you can think of, Councilman?
No, this will be the last MAP fund, you know, this year, and then it'll be,
yeah,
this will be the end of it.
Right. It'll be actually the MAP fund will be no more because it is a joint fund between the district and the city and with the Louisville. I don't know if that gets resolved by ordinance or.
So it is in the annexation agreement. I just wanted to give this report to council to know that the money went exactly where you intended it to go. The money went for the community of Nampa to see. Long-term commitments to our downtown station and the downtown response units that were the oldest ones left. So I appreciate Councilman Bauer's commitment to the committee. It is the last time we meet him. He got lucky this time, and I just happened to have a crew, and his son's birthday was right there, so we took advantage and gave his son a ride. So it was a pretty fun day. But it is the last time we'll meet. We will communicate with Councilman throughout the process. Anything that's not done as of January 1, the MAP funds that remember, everything is at that point at the district's responsibility. So we won't have a new ladder truck by that January 1 date. We just want you to know that that's where that money's going. The remodeling station one might not be fully completed, but that's where that money is going, and we'll keep Councilman Bauer updated and hopefully reporting back to you with those the progress of those projects.
Thank you. Chief Carpenter, thank you, Councilman Bauer, for your service. It's appreciated. Are there any questions from the council?
Mayor, I just need a little clarification. So the $850,000, which was not in the balance of the MAP fund.
It is.
Oh, it is.
All of those projects
in the Nampa Fire Protection District will be contributing an additional $850,000 this year. Because the MAP fund balance of April of 21 is $1,017,000.
Yeah, and with the city and district both still have one contribution to make during this budget year, and that brings us up to just under.
So this amount is available in this budget year, is what you're saying.
Yes.
And I'm just curious, what's the percentage of district monies? What that contribution of that $850,000, what percentage is city?
So up to this point, the total amount in the fund is 50-50% city.
50%. So $425,000.
Yeah, and then obviously the district will cover any remaining funds on the platform apparatus, which it looks to be between $300,000 and $400,000.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions, Randy?
Good job. I'm not going to get in the weeds on a lot of the remodel stuff. I had a lot of questions pop up, but it's not my place to ask them at this point. If the direction you're going, you feel comfortable with, and the costs associated with it are what you feel comfortable with paying, then I'm not going to say anything along those lines. I just hope that you get a lot of the things accomplished that need to be accomplished in Station 1. The only question I have as far as the truck, will it be relocated to Station 6, or will it be taken out of service?
When we do the construction?
No, as far as...
Oh, the old platform. So it goes into reserve, and as a reserve unit, we will easily get another 10 to 12 years of use out of it. So it will be the backup to the new platform.
So will it go to Station 6 then?
That's a good question. We only have one other station that will fit in. Okay. So that is something that we have to look at. Luckily... we are designing Station 6 currently, and that is one of the thoughts. We do need somewhere to put it, because if it's in Station 1, it's Station 5, and Station 5 is currently full with other apparatus. So,
I know the conversation earlier about Station 6 was the potential of relocating that ladder truck out there. So.
It would be a proper place to put it as a backup platform for sure.
And then the wisdom of using permeable pavers, they have to be traffic graded. It's going to take a lot of abuse there, so just want to make sure you're making the right decision. Utilizing those over just standard concrete reinforced.
I know Chief Adams has done all the research on it. We've been working with an engineering firm on making sure we have the right style and quality of paper out front. Okay. I mean, they obviously we have probably one of the heaviest apparatus in the city, so.
Right. 3 to 5 years from now, I'd hate to have you have issues with pounding as far as on the soil subsurface materials. But other than that, I think the numbers are appropriate with the amount of work that's going to be done on that second level and the vertical nature of exiting the paths that are restricted to this point or easily not easily identifiable. I think you'll be able to take care of those things. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I've toured that station, so it's in need. I've been through it myself. If a female worker needs a bathroom or whatever, so it's just needs to be with the times and be a little bit better liability purposes and all sorts.
Yeah, a lot of the work you see in Station 1 was done by the crews themselves. I mean, if you look at everything from the cabinetry to hopefully not the plumbing, but probably plumbing at some points, if you look back in our history, and the type of people that worked for the fire department, I mean, we had electricians, we had plumbers within the fire department, and not that I'm saying it was okay to do, oftentimes projects were taken under the radar and done. So it will be nice to finally have a facility that we can put into a life cycle and manage properly instead of reacting to emergencies over the years. Right?
Mayor,
I'll
just follow up. You'll be requiring, I'm sorry.
Speak right into your microphone. Thank you. Sorry about that.
I assume you'll be bonding and insuring the general contractor to ensure that that's a part of the project.
And actually, even if it does go into the time frame in which we'll be operating under the districts, we already have a contract to hire the city's team to assist us through the process as well. Okay. So,
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So, Jeff, I apologize, but I'm going to have you do your staff report after public hearing. Council, I'd like to get through items 1 through 4 before public hearing because we have people sitting here that I don't want to have to sit here through the entire public hearing process. So, we're going to move into new business, action item 5.1. This is to authorize the mayor. We have two different resolutions here tonight, one for Hubert Osborne, the other for Jeff Cornelius. They're different situations, and Rick, I would like for you to come up and give us a little bit of an overview about the process. So this is to authorize the appointment, the first one, of Hubert Osborne to the Development Impact the Advisory Committee to fill a new seat as a citizen member for an 18-month term. Rick, thank you for quickly giving us an overview of the process.
Yeah, I will try to be brief. When there's a board and commission, the term that's going to expire, our policy is to post. Amy does a press release, and we post on the website that we are taking applications. We try to do that for a month, and then once the application deadline closes, we interview the applicants, and there's an interview committee that makes a recommendation to the mayor with a letter stating the preference. In this case, there were 3 applicants for the posted position for the Impact Fee Advisory Committee. One of the applicants was non-responsive, unable to schedule a time to do a follow-up interview. She had also stated she didn't know much about Impact Fee. She was just looking to get involved. So, it really then went to 2 applicants, Jeff Cornelius and Hubert Osborne, were 2 who applied. And the interview committee consisted of Councilman Haverfield, Tom Points, because of the public works, heavy involvement with Impact Fees, Patrick Sullivan, who's the staff liaison for Impact Fee Advisory Committee, and then a member from the Impact Fee Advisory Committee, Sharon Harris, who's here present. So we went through the interview process, and I help facilitate, just make sure it happens. I don't drive an outcome. I just make sure that the process goes as well. And after interviewing both gentlemen, Jeff Cornelius and Hubert Osborne, it was the unanimous opinion of the 4 that both would be an asset on the committee. So the recommendation to the mayor and the letter that's in your packet should reflect that. The consensus is that both be recommended to serve. There is no, I think maybe our local ordinance, and Todd can speak to this, our local ordinance allows 5 to 7 members. I think the state requires a minimum of 5, and we set sort of a cap of 7. Right now, there's 4 members on the Impact Fee Advisory Committee. Ron Van Auger and Chip Kinsler represent the development community. That is their full-time job and what they're engaged in. They represent that. Dennis Davis and Sharon Harris represent the citizens at large. And then, if you recall, earlier this year, Derek Cooper was recommended to fill in the development piece and was not voted in, and so that's a remaining, that's been a vacant piece. But with the local changes, we make sure that citizens at large have a majority. And in the past, Derek would have been a third developer. It would have been a 3-2 developer to citizens at large on the five-member group. But with the changes that you've approved over the last couple of months, the recommendation is to put Hubert Osborne and Jeff Cornelis both as citizens at large, which would move the group to five, with Chip Kinsler and Ron Van Ocker, the remaining developers, development community represented on the board. So I think that's a brief kind of fill-in on the process that led to tonight's letter that Patrick drafted, since he is the staff liaison, and it recommends them both.
Mayor, if I may. So Mr. Davis is not serving anymore?
Mr. Davis is serving.
So there's a total of six in my mind.
Yes, these two would bring it up to six. So right now there's four with a vacancy. So
okay, I thought you mentioned five, so that would be
So the vacancy would have been a five, but we recommended that both Jeff and Hubert be recommended that they both be an asset. And so Ron Van Ocker, Chip Kinsler, Dennis Davis, and Sharon Harris with the vacancy, and then this would be a six. So
are there any other questions before we move forward?
Mayor?
Yes.
So this puts me in a little bit of an awkward situation. I appreciate citizens when they want to come forward and be involved, but we made it pretty clear at our when we talked about how we wanted the Impact Advisory Fee Committee made up, that it was not, that it was less developers than citizens at large. And while Mr. Cornelius has established himself as a financial advisor, he still holds a real estate license. And whether he's active or not, it still says that he's a real estate agent. And so that puts more on the developer side, even though he applied as a citizen. And that's, even though it was unanimous from the committee and the agenda says mayor approved, it still goes against what the will of the council was.
So could we, just for clarity, and Rick and I had this discussion earlier, the difficult thing with Jeff is that he wouldn't qualify as a realtor. And as far as the guidelines, he would be unable to serve at all because he's not, if he were appointed to represent the development community, he wouldn't qualify to represent the development community, hence why he has applied as a citizen. And Rick and I just had this discussion a little earlier, and it was a good reminder that he would not qualify to serve in that capacity because he would not, he's not in that developing community side. So, which puts it in a little bit of an awkward place because his primary business is not real estate.
Why would he not qualify for the developer side? That would be an interesting thing to know.
Rick, I'll let you speak to that.
Yeah, or I don't know if Patrick... if I'm playing the ball in this, but I know that the information discussing with Patrick was that the statute with the active and the development community, because it's the state statute, if I recall, it's called the Development Impact Fee Advisory Committee. It's actually, and so the minimum requirements that the state puts within the statute envisions that the people who constitute the committee that are active in the development community are people who are actually paying impact fees regularly, therefore providing input on impact fees because it's an impact fee advisory committee. So someone who holds a real estate license and sells maybe a few homes over a decade would not be someone envisioned in the state statute who's regularly paying impact fees from the development community. So So Councilwoman Levite, Mayor, when the process took place, when the interviews took place, Mr. Cornelius did disclose he does have a realtor's license, and I think he's present here, and I think he may have noted that he's sold maybe a few homes over the entire, but that isn't what he does. He's a financial advisor, and he holds that license for particular opportunities to do it, but it isn't what his active profession is. He disclosed that. We still did the interview at that time. It wasn't like we conducted the interview, and the group of the people were were asked if they had a preference, and to be candid, there was actually there was a division among the group about who, if they had to pick one, there was division. So their preference was, why not both? We like them both. And so since that was what the recommendation came, the letter just reflects that the committee's recommendation is that both be placed. So I just want to say that there wasn't there was no disrespect intended, at least in the committee's recommendations, from what the guidance of council was trying to figure out. Is he a developer who pays impact fees and would represent that as far as the definition, or is he a citizen at large wanting to serve as a citizen, expressing concern that impact fees are fair for the citizen? He certainly in the interview conveyed concerns as a citizen that impact fees be fair and protect the existing resident, which the intention is that growth funds growth. So
I appreciate the explanation, and I do believe he would do a good job. I also appreciate knowing that it's actually called the Development Impact Advisory. Never heard that, and I've never heard what the definition of a developer was, and so that's very informative. Thank you.
I would defer to, hopefully I didn't overstate the issues. I would look to maybe legal on this. If you have the, I don't know if you have IO code just in front of you, but I think it's section 6782, but I think the subheading in the state statute is that I think it says development impact fee.
Madam Mayor and Rick and Council Member Levi, that's correct. The title is Development Impact Fee Advisory Committee. And it does, as Rick said, the development community is defined as those that are active in the business of development, building on real estate. So it creates an opportunity, I guess, for you to define what active means. Can you hear me, Mayor?
Lift your mic up. If these mics are directional, so we've got to speak directly into it. Thank you.
Is that better?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
So the title of the statute is the Development Impact Fee Advisory Committee. It does also talk about those from the development community being active in the business of development, construction of real estate. And so it creates that opportunity for you to interpret and define what the word active means. In an absolute, perfect, pure scenario, there would be no, Jeff wouldn't have a real estate license, but he does, and it's de minimis in this case, and it's up to you to decide what your interpretation and application of that language is for this committee, which also would remind you is an advisory committee. It doesn't have any authority to make particular decisions. So that's all I have to say. I'm happy to answer our questions if you have them.
Mayor Clinton.
Thank you. Yes.
Am I good to sit? Then I'll see you have any questions.
Sit down.
Okay, thanks.
I'm willing to make a motion to authorize the appointment of Hubert Osborne, who is the first person up. It's not Jeff. So I'll make the motion to, because we see Hubert as a concerned citizen, value to the community.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to appoint Hubert Osborne to the Development Impact Advisory Committee to fill a new seat as a citizen member for an 18-month term effective 7-6, ending in 1-6 of 23. Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
By all means, yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Muchie?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Mayor. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Osborne, for your diligence, all you do for the community. Appreciate it.
Mayor, I'll make the recommendation. We also accept Jeff Cornelius as far as on this Development Impact Committee.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Muchie?
Yes.
Levi?
No.
Bauer?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
And Jeff, thank you.
Yes. Thanks, Jeff.
As well. Thank you for your willingness to serve. You were likewise. Thank you both. And Sharon, thank you for your endless service. You serve in so many capacities and is greatly appreciated. Thank you. Okay, it is after 6:30, but I would like to get through 5:03 on the agenda so that Courtney can go home.
So I, if you don't mind, I'd like to, this is authorizing the Nampa Recreation Center to propose a no-contract monthly membership fee and membership policies as presented in your packet. Do we need a presentation?
No.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Brunner?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Muchie?
Yes.
Good job. Great idea. We like it.
We love it.
Thank you. I would like to ask, Beth, you could actually, I don't think you have to stay for any other reason, so if you could come forward, let's do 5-4 on the agenda. And as Beth comes forward, this is her last council meeting. And I realize that we're preparing for your going away on Thursday, but I didn't do anything for tonight. And council, you are all invited. Her going away is Thursday afternoon. I believe it's from 3 to 4:30, is that correct, over at the Development Services Center. As Beth steps in to serve in her new capacity at VIVA, she's going to do an amazing job. And I just want to say how much I have appreciated your work, Beth. You've done a great job. And as we said, your fingerprint is in our community and on our community in a number of places. And you've served us very, very well. And I look forward to continuing to work with you. And so it's a great thing for you and your career and for our community.
But, well, before you tonight, I'm excited that this is, I get to have this on the agenda before I leave. So Project Custom is a project we've been working with since the beginning of the year. They're a large manufacturer. They're not ready to make a lot of public information known yet because they're still in their final due diligence on their site selection process. So they are still evaluating. They have some sites in Nampa that are their finalists, but they do have some other opportunities as well. They want to make sure they have everything lined out before they make their final decision, but I think we're really close. They would construct a 550,000 square foot facility and employ over 200 people, paying above the county average wage. They'd be close to $45,000 a year for the wages that they would pay. And they are looking at some sites that would have some significant infrastructure costs associated with it. As part of their incentive analysis with the State Department of Commerce, Commerce put forward an opportunity for up to $300,000 from the Idaho Opportunity Fund. But the way that that program works is it flows through the city. So there's no obligation from the city for any of this funding, but the city has to be the applicant for it through the Department of Commerce. Then we would submit documentation of the infrastructure costs associated with it. The state would pay us, and then we would pay the company. So we've done this with Wolf Lactalis early, I guess probably around 2007, and then also with Go-Go Squeeze in 2014 when they came in. There are specific milestones that they'll have to reach, so they have to demonstrate that they've met their employment goals and the wage rates. So like with Go-Go Squeeze, I actually received a copy of their payroll report, so and then had to go through and analyze it and make sure that they met the appropriate milestones. So my request before you today is that I am able to submit this application on behalf of the city for Project Custom, and I will do that before Friday.
I'll make the motion to authorize that.
Second.
And then I'll ask a question. Will this information be presented to the Nampa Development Corporation as well? Will you be phoning in, or will there somebody else be giving this information?
I'm not sure if they'll be quite ready for a formal action with the NDC this month, but yes, they will come before the board at some point.
They themselves or somebody representing?
We'll have representation.
Okay. Thanks, Beth. Mm-hmm.
Councilwoman, yes.
Thank you. Question, Beth. So as I'm reading through this document, it says to provide an incentive for business. And I'm just logically wondering, with the growth that we're experiencing and people want to be in Nampa, and even though it's not costing us, that why would we be offering incentives at this time?
For the city of Nampa, this project in particular is it's kind of the first domino for the area that they are evaluating is within our industrial area that is currently lacking is an agricultural field, which is fabulous. We need them, but that's where we have our future industrial growth. So this is that first pivotal one that could come in and really launch that entire area for future industrial projects. So, and it certainly was significant size. It's over $100 million investment. and we don't see that size of projects very often.
And just to follow up, I am supportive of industry because that's good growth, but just found that curious. Thank you.
Mayor Klein.
Yes.
Beth, are you saying that this could be sort of like the first domino in like Caldwell, the way that their industrial park is developed?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, we've had a motion and a second on the table. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Mucci?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Thank you very much, and thank you for letting me know.
Thank you. Okay, so we are ready to move into public hearings, and thank you for your patience. Our first public hearing is actually, I need a motion to go ahead and continue this public hearing again until July 19th.
So moved.
Second.
Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Mucci?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Item 6.2 is an action item. This is an annexation and zoning to residential professional zoning district for Maple Leaf at 0 and 4921 and 5009 Stand Lane. There are county parcel numbers that I won't go through. This is for the Orcha Lara, I'm saying it probably wrong and I do apologize, Heights subdivision and a development. This is also a development agreement for future subdivision to 30 single family detached residential, 24 single family attached residential townhomes, one commercial and three common lots. The gross density of 7.62 and net density of 9.18. So this is for Landmark Pacific Development representing William and Linda Larson. Is the applicant with us this evening? Thank you. Thank you for stating your name and address.
Hi, good evening. Stephanie Hopkins with Kane Engineering. I'm here representing Landmark Development. My address is 5725 North Discovery Way, Boise, 83713. Okay.
Yep.
So this project probably looks familiar to you folks because you saw it in January of this year. We initially heard by P&Z December of 2020, and the recommended approval at that time came before you, were not as favorably received with our plan at the time. And so we've kind of gone back to the drawing board and have reconceptualized some of our plan. So, we're requesting annexation into city limits with the RP district with a concept, with a concept plan that we'd like to attach to the single family community that we're proposing. So this is for Maple Leaf. I'm excited to talk to you about some of the changes we've made too. The property is approximately 7.81 acres. It's located south of Stand Lane and is approximately 800 feet to the east of Happy Valley Road. As you can see here, it's not incorporated into NAPA yet. Let me see if I can point. So our property is located just to the east of some of those that are unincorporated.
Christy, could you put your cursor on it for her so that when she is kind of wanting to point, that we can see exactly where she's looking? So can you see the cursor?
Yes.
Thank you.
So this is the property, and so 7.81 acres. We're located south of Stand Lane and east of Happy Valley Road, as I said. Currently unincorporated in Cannon County, as our neighbors are as well. And we're contiguous to the city of Nampa, which is located to the north. The property to the north is the Gateway Center. It's currently zoned BC, which is community business. It allows for a wide variety of uses. Currently, there's retail, there's a Winco, there's some exercise facilities, other service facilities that are located within that zone. It's about 70 acres. And as I'm sure you're all aware, it was recently acquired by Gardner Company, who had a reputation for doing a lot of mixed-use development and doing some really high-end multifamily as well as commercial and mixed-use development. So to the south, we do have Canaan County property, and directly to the east and west is property in Canaan County that's single-family residential. To the west, we do have the RMH zone, which is the multifamily zone. There's the Gateway Apartments over there, as well as the, so the Station and Gateway Apartments are located to the west, as well as a new development that was approved in 2020. It's about 480 feet to our west. Well, I actually created an exhibit so you can see where our proposed area is, and then this is the multifamily development that was approved in 2020. They do have approximately four or five plexes, four or six plexes, which is about 44 units on 3.5 acres, which is about 12 and a half dwelling units an acre. And then there's a skilled nursing facility that was approved in 2016 to the south of that. And there's some suburban residential to the west, and then the healthcare zoning district to the north that's comprising the St. Al's kind of campus. So the purpose of this slide is really to kind of situate not only us, but you in understanding what the overall region is developed. And there's a bunch of employment, commercial, and mixed opportunities for folks to live and work near the interstate and other transit corridors. Again, this is just another exhibit to kind of situate you. So there's Walmart located north of I-4. There's multiple recreational opportunities, a huge employment center at the medical campus kind of area, and then some industrial uses in the area as well. So the future land use map does designate this piece of land as community mixed use. There are all of our adjacent properties are also designated as community mixed use. The comp plan and the future land use map were updated, I think, in February of last year. So this should be pretty reflective of what the community wants for growth in the area as this area does redevelop. There's some low density residential is located to the northeast and high density to the west, which, as we're seeing, is kind of already starting to redevelop into the high density residential. Happy Valley Road is an arterial roadway, and Stan Lane is a collector roadway, both of which are meant to capture a fair amount of traffic, especially as things redevelop and more traffic is able to travel on improved roadways. So community mixed use land use does correlate with the RP zoning district we're requesting. It does encourage 8+ units an acre. We're a little bit below that because we have taken into consideration your comments from the last time around, as well as neighbors' comments, and have tried to decrease our density, as well as make things a little bit more consistent with our adjacent neighbors. So we're at 7.62 gross dwelling units an acre. Let's see. So as Compass states in the staff report, the location is an infill site in an employment-centric area. It's close to thousands of jobs within a mile of the site, and that really is where you want homes to be located as well, so the folks can walk to work or walk to recreation or food or whatever they need to and not use the roadways as much. So this is our conceptual development plan, which would be tied to the development agreement should you favorably approve us tonight. We are proposing 58 lots overall. 54 of those are single-family residential lots, 30 of which are single-family detached lots on the periphery of the site. So just to orient you, north is actually facing to the left, and all the homes, all the lots that you see on the bottom and the right and the top are actually 6,000 square foot single-family detached lots. I'll show you the difference between the last time we came up here to from the plan that you saw the last time around, but this is much less dense than it was previously. And then we're showing 24 single-family townhome lots on the center, in the center of the site, as well as an open space lot and a common or a commercial lot on the far left or the north part of the site. The commercial lot is about 30,000 square feet, and the open space lot is about 28,000 square feet. So as I mentioned, our proposed density is 7.62 dwelling units a gross acre. and 9.18 units of net acre. And we're proposing 2 points of access, so it's not easy to see on, easier to see on this slide, but one, both from Sam Lane into Easterly, which will be a private street throughout the subdivision. So since the last time we met with you, we did speak with staff a few times. We read through the findings to understand kind of exactly where you all were coming from and the changes you'd like to see, some of your concerns at the time, and met with neighbors as well to discuss what they would like to see. This is our original layout. As you can see, we just show townhomes on the periphery as well as the interior of the site. We initially shown 94 lots, and now we're showing 54 lots altogether. So we have 30 single-family residential lots on the periphery, whereas before, I think it was about 60. And in the center, we've got 24 townhome units. So the periphery of the site is actually all single-family detached. Everything in this subdivision will be single-family homes, all to be owned in fee simple homes. But the center of the site will be townhomes, so they'll be attached single-family homes, and the exterior of the site will be detached single-family homes. So just to give you a little bit of a summary, we decreased the residential lot count from 94 to 54. We decreased the density from 12 units an acre to 7.62 units an acre. We replaced 54 townhome lots on the periphery of the site with 30, approximately 6,000 square foot detached single family lots. And we decreased the 36 townhomes in the center of the site to 24 townhomes. We increased the rear setback on all homes, so that if you'll remember from our last discussion, there was a little bit of talk about the rear setbacks. We had originally shown 8 feet. We've increased that to 15 feet, and we've increased the open space at the south part of the project to include a children's play structure and a gazebo and seating area for residents. So just to give you one more look at how that's changed, it's really opened up the site plan, and our goal was really to make the lots on the periphery more consistent with the lots that are on our adjacent Canyon County neighbors. We realize this area is going to redevelop and it'll all change in the future, but we wanted to try to make it a little bit more of a transition in the interim. So this is a rendering of the site, just to give you a little bit of an idea of how common space will be situated. Obviously, we'll landscape it in accord with the city's requirements. We're also going to be locating the gazebo and the tot lot at the south part of the site, as I mentioned. The north side will have a future commercial lot that will be likely a neighborhood surveying kind of use. It could be a small coffee shop or an office, something that would really fit in the area, but would be walkable for residents. And hopefully a service would actually allow them to walk to it, to something they might want to do. These are just some typical home elevations that we're proposing. Has some nice finishes with soffits and batten board finishes, kind of modern. And then the home finishes on the interior too are quite nice and customizable for residents. So in reading the staff report for both this time around and the first time, there were several neighbor concerns that we kind of noticed, and one of which was a concern that we were not meeting the Urkelara Heights CCNRs. And so this was originally a parcel within that overall subdivision. But in looking at, we talked to our title company and found that there are no CCNRs attached to this piece of ground. And then also had our survey team look at it to make sure that the legal description that was associated with the CCNRs is not associated to our property. So it looks like the CCNRs that were referenced in some of the public testimony are actually for property that's to the east. So the ones that we've highlighted in blue are where those CCNRs are associated to. So just to kind of clear that up a little bit, wanted to make sure that we were also in, you know, we were abiding by what rules were applicable. There was a mention of vagueness.
Ms. Hopkins, Mayor, I thought we were doing 10 minutes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mention that 10 minutes this morning. So
and you're doing a great job. But it's all in our packet, and I guess I'm one that kind of likes to hurry things along.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I don't have a clock up here, so I kind of tend to ramble.
Mayor, may I ask one question?
Yes.
Okay, so Ms. Hopkins, right?
Yes.
Thank you so much for your presentation.
Who's your builder? Have you designated a builder or builders for these 30 freestanding homes? I see you have a design, so somebody has at least presented that to you.
Madam Mayor, Mr. Cambridge Homes.
Have they built in Napa before? Or do you
have any idea? They've done, I think that's...
In Heartland right now.
Okay. In Heartland?
Heartland.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. How much more did you have in your presentation? I know it is in our packet. Thank you.
Thank you. And I apologize for rambling if I did. But
you're doing a great job. I thought we were going to kind of stick to these 10 minutes for presentation.
No, that's great. I appreciate you listening to us, and we appreciate the option to come back before you with a plan that we feel is improved and that we've really worked on, you know, with neighbors and staff to make sure that it's complying with everything that you were concerned about the last time around. So,
great, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Council, do you have any questions at this time? Councilman Haverfield.
Appreciate your presentation. Listened to us, I think, from the prior development that was brought before us. Obviously, this is a tremendous improvement. My only question is the interior lots. You call them townhomes. Are they separated by property lines, or are they townhouses, or are they townhomes with common?
Madam Mayor, Councilman Haverfield, they will be separated by lot lines. So those lines that you see there are actually property lines, and they'll be all separately owned.
Okay, and they'll be two-story?
Yes.
With garages or not?
Yes, they'll have, I think the floor plan differs, but it's two-car garages on most of them. I think one-car garage on a couple. So, and then the parking pad out front. So regardless, we'll be meeting the city's requirements for parking.
And then 15-foot setback as far as on the east and west boundaries and south boundaries to the other property owners. So the connectivity as far as for city property is to the north. Is that correct? There's nothing to the east or west at this time.
Mayor, Council would have a look, yes. That's correct.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And then one last clarifying question. My understanding is the exterior single-family homes are one-story, not
yes.
two.
Is that yes, Madam Mayor, that's correct. Thank you for bringing that up.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you so much. We'll have you back at the end. You know the routine. I also want to thank you, Christy, for coming forward. Councilman Bruner, thank you for the reminder. I keep forgetting to mention the 10 minutes. And so, Debbie, I'm going to have you help me track time on the 10 minutes, and I'll get into that routine. So thank you.
I just want to get this councilwoman out for
her birthday. Out of here for her birthday? Yes.
What a gentleman.
So, Christy, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Christy Watkins, Principal Planner for the City of Nampa. So the request before you this evening is for approval or denial of the annexation and zoning to RP of the property located at 0 and 4921 and 5009 Stam Lane with a development agreement to include the concept plan for the proposed Maple Leaf concept. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of this project at the public hearing on May 11th. So the property is currently outside the city limits and not yet zoned by the city, but it is contiguous on the north side to the BC zone. It is bordered on the south, east, and west sides by Canyon County residential properties, and on the north by the Nampa Gateway Center. The uses in the area, as she stated, are currently single-family residential with some retail and some higher density areas to the west. So the property is eligible for annexation since it is adjacent to the Nampa city limits, and it is the proposed zoning and development plan conforms to the guidelines that are set forth in the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan future land use designation is community mixed use, which, as she stated, calls for a maximum development of 27.8 units per acre, and this project is proposing 7.62 dwelling units per gross acre. The community mixed use district encourages development that is planned to specifically include commercial uses with a focus on providing community-wide needs and services in high-density residential. The RP zoning has standards that will be applied at the time of building permit, and it will also be subject to design review on the building elevations. So this project, according to the staff analysis of this newly proposed project, it meets the comprehensive plan for the community mixed-use designation. Nampa, in its comprehensive plan, has determined that it is in the public interest to provide a mix of commercial services with varying residential housing opportunities. It is not within walking distance of any of the schools that it is going to be designated to: Columbia High School, East Valley Middle School, and Endeavor Elementary School. Compass analysis states that the housing-to-job ratio indicates more housing is needed in this area. There is no current farmland being consumed by the development, and there is 156 acres of farmland existing within a mile of this project. So she walked through the layout, 7.81 acres, 58 total lots, one commercial lot, three common lots, 30 single-family lots, and 24 attached townhouse lots. And the open space provided comes to 0.65 acres for 9.17% of the property area. The previous plan proposed 5.5%, so it has been increased. So in the RP zone, just to kind of go over what the RP zone standards are for lot sizes, they shall meet or exceed 6,000 square feet for the first two units and 1,350 square feet for each additional unit for one structure on one lot that can then be split into individual lots that are attached. So for the sixplex structures in the center, they should be 11,400 square feet. This project shows them at 16,876 square feet. The smallest detached single-family lots should be a minimum of 6,000 square feet, and this shows them at 6,021 square feet. So the setbacks proposed are 20 feet from the back of sidewalk. The property line is in the center of the drive aisle, and so generally they are measured from the property line back. In this case, they have measured that 20 feet from the back of the sidewalk, 20 feet so that their driveways are 20 feet deep and out of the right-of-way. They are required to have 8-foot side and rear setbacks. They have proposed 8-foot side setbacks and 15-foot rear setbacks on the perimeter properties. And the dedication of right-of-way on Stam Lane is required at 40 feet from the section line. A traffic impact study was reviewed and accepted by the city engineer, and it was noted that no turn lanes would be required at the access point of this development. A detailed landscape plan will be required to be submitted with the preliminary plat. The correspondence that we received from multiple neighbors, as is shown in your staff report. We also received a letter of support from one neighbor that appreciates the efforts to address their concerns from the previous meetings. So the concerns that were expressed were decreased property value, increased traffic, increased noise, increased crime, destruction of that country feeling, and the character of the neighborhood that would change drastically. We also received the standard comments from the building department, the fire department, the police department, and the engineering department. So the conditions of approval are listed in your staff report, and we would make one note that the Planning and Zoning Commission had asked to reference an agreement regarding sewer extension to the south property on Orchard, but that's not going to be possible at this time. So per the applicant's specific request and with NAMPA engineering support, we would request that you remove condition 1E in your motion. With that, this is your motion for annexation and zoning to RP, and I will stand for any questions.
Mayor.
Yes.
Christy, it appears that Acer Loop is what it's called, the two access points to the property. The western is pretty much in alignment with Galleria Drive, which is coming out of the theater area. The second entrance point, is the distance, are they appropriate? Has that been checked to make sure they're far enough apart?
Councilman Haberfield, that would be an engineering question,
okay.
And I have not measured them.
So the possibility of just this site layout is still possibly in question, or will there be somebody like Daniel that can come forward and speak?
I think Daniel can probably speak to that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
I apologize, Mayor, Councilman Haberfield, I was speaking with Jeff. Your question was?
Okay, I was just looking at the site plan. In this case, the lower drive is in somewhat of an alignment with Galleria Drive. Is obviously a good thing because the cross potential there, but the second entrance point, is it far enough away that it meets our requirements?
It does not meet our policy. However, as they looked at it for the turn lane warrant, we had them look at it from a safety perspective, and we have said that it will work.
So that they're not going to be a restricted access on that second entrance?
Not to start. That doesn't mean in the future it couldn't become right in, right out, but that's not something that is necessary at this point.
So, Stam Lane, is it a fully improved road frontage, curb gutter, and sidewalk?
Mayor and Councilman Haverfield, the north side where the Gateway Center has been developed does have curb gutter and sidewalk. Mm-hmm. This property will be required to put in the sidewalk. They will not be required to do full pavement and curb gutter sidewalk widening or curb gutter widening per the city's current code.
Why is that?
Mayor, Councilman Haverfield, our current city code, as we amended it after we changed our impact fees, does not require collector and arterial roadways to be fully widened unless there is a warrant for turn lanes or something of that nature. The impact fees, when we raised those, that was the trade-off that we did with the development community, because the reality is that widening in these short spurts does not do anything to gain us capacity throughout the system, and so we opted for that higher impact fee so that we could fund the intersection improvements, and at some future point when the road widening is necessary, that would be paid for out of impact fees.
So the interior road system, will it be a public road?
They have proposed a private roadway.
So it's private?
Yes.
So my only concern as this moves forward is people crossing over Stam Lane, especially kids and maybe even adults, people on bicycles wanting to go into that entertainment area, if it's retained as that. It's not really known, but my understanding is the theater might stay. Other aspects of that development might be a mixed use, which would have an attraction to people. And being the near proximity, would there be some point in the future where a hawk signal might be proposed? To be able to allow the cross-access, since otherwise they have to go clear back down to the light to be able to get across. And if we don't have any continuation of a pathway, especially a sidewalk, it's going to be kind of scary for those folks.
So, Mayor, Councilman Haverfield, this property is located approximately 850 feet from the intersection. With that being the case, I don't think we would ever consider a hawk signal at that location. There is a project on the corner that will be installing a sidewalk along their frontage, and that will reduce the gap between those two properties. Let me see here. To about 450 feet. We can look at what may be able to be done in between those, though there is not a dedicated right-of-way as those parcels in between are in the county, and so it's not very likely we would be able to have sidewalk installed along there. It's more likely that people who were trying to get across would need to go there and walk on the shoulder of the road till they got to the signal and then crossed it out.
So is it an 8-foot sidewalk that would be required?
Because it's a detached sidewalk, 5-foot minimum is our current standard.
Okay.
And the sidewalk would not be right up against the road.
Right. It can, yeah.
Okay. So I have a question. I know we had talked about if there's a even though the traffic impact study has not been done and maybe doesn't fully warrant a build-out. One of the things that I think we had talked about, and Jeff, you can tell me if I'm wrong on this, I know that impact fees do fund the road improvements, but we have at times required some right-in, right-out adjustments at the time of the development in addition to the impact fees because of the impact. So Stam Lane is going to be a busy road. I think there's two concerns I would have is that we don't accommodate and plan for the traffic impact of this subdivision. And the other thing is the not having a sidewalk and requiring them to go down
can we not require that the actual the developer fund and put in the sidewalk to connect with the other sidewalk that is there? Because it shouldn't be done at the expense of the current property owners, but there should be a safe way for people to access.
Mayor, we can look at whether we can accomplish that within the existing right-of-way. If not, I don't believe we would have any recourse to require the developer to go acquire property from a neighbor, or at least that would certainly not be something that has historically been the practice of the city, to require a developer to go purchase right-of-way from a neighboring property in order to put something of that nature in.
I'm thinking maybe a neighbor would allow them, without a purchase, to put a sidewalk in for the betterment of the entire area, to where we have connectivity to a way to get across, because there's definitely a safety issue. If you would not be putting a hop signal or something there, then it's definitely a problem to safely get across that road.
And Mayor, I'm sure that you can ask the developer whether if the property owners between those, there are, I believe, three property owners between them and the apartment project, you can certainly ask the developer if they would be willing to put in that sidewalk if those property owners are willing to work with them for that, the ability to do such.
Thank you.
And I'd like to follow up on that. I was just thinking a local improvement district, if that's a potential here or not.
Mayor, Councilman Haverfield, because those properties are not within the city limits, that would not be an option.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Daniel at this time? Thank you, Daniel. Okay, this is a public hearing. Debbie, what do we have signed up?
We have David and Pamela Corsis, and they're opposed. And it says they're on Teams.
They're online. Okay. So, David and Pamela, are you there? You think they are there? Or they were there?
They are online.
They're online? Okay. Well, we'll pause and get into where we can see them. And then maybe we can see if we can get them unmuted. So David and Pamela, do you know how to unmute yourselves? I'm not seeing. Is this the DC one that looks like it's muted?
Yeah.
Do we by any chance have them all muted? Can we unmute them all?
They have to unmute themselves.
They have to unmute themselves. Okay. Do you have a telephone number that you can text with them? Okay. I'll tell you what, well, if you guys can work on that, if someone can text with them, we'll move on to the next person signed up, and we'll come back to David and Pamela.
Jeff Hess, and he's in favor.
Jeff, thank you for coming forward. You'll have 3 minutes, and if you could state your name again and your address.
My name is Jeff Hess, 35 North Hastings Drive, Nampa, Idaho, 83687. Our property is to the south of this contiguous. I am in favor of, but there is a development agreement that I think needs to be tightened up a little bit. If you could bring up the drawings of the lots with the setbacks. The main thing is all around this is flood irrigation, and this property was farmed and flood irrigated in the past. So, and one way the setbacks is easier. There's the setbacks on the east, west, and south are 15 foot, which the existing ditches have to be tiled. Problem is having the right for the users to get in there and use those without having to go to court and enforce their rights. So having a development agreement that provides for all of the water users around there. The other thing is that because it's flood irrigated around there, that water runs off and it's historically run onto these properties. So the design of that has got to be critical. And so the development agreement is, in its language, pretty broad. and I'd like to see it tightened up over rights of the user, not just the association, but the individual users as well. The other thing is they've requested a waiver on the grading of the sewer. Gravity sewer runs to Stan on half the property, and it grades to the south across my property, which had water washer. I'd requested that that be looked at as a grade, but they indicated that they didn't want to do that. I sort of disagree with their letter, but I don't have a problem with that waiver, that condition, because I had proposed it at the Planning Commission. So that really is the biggest issue, is all of the water users around there, and the design of the tiling of that, and how the water gets off of the properties on the east with them. That typically has been running into ditches on this property. So those are real critical from a design standpoint. And if you don't have a tight development agreement, then we're going to end up having to fight with that over a period of time. And I'll stop hearing questions.
Thank you for bringing those issues forward. It's appreciated. Thank you very much. Okay, so let's go back to the couple ahead.
David and Pamela.
Yes. So, David and Pamela, I see that you're there. Are you able to connect?
Ma'am.
It looks like not, yes.
If they're not able to connect, they have two letters in their packets that might state the same thing. I don't know, just throwing that information out there.
Thank you. Were you able to reach them?
I'm texting them, but I'm not getting any response back.
Okay, they may not see it. Okay, well, we'll come back to them. So the next person is
Matt Drown, and he's in favor, and he's here. He's good.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
And then Don Knuhl.
Very good, and I'll pass as well.
And is he in favor or opposed?
In favor.
In favor. Perfect. Thank you. And is that everyone that we have signed up at the moment?
Yep.
Okay. So,
there was a Mike Altman that signed up online. Did he say he did not want to speak, or did he want to speak? He's online, so I didn't know if you wanted to give him the opportunity.
Do you not have him on your list?
I don't have him on the list.
Okay. That's Altman. Is his name?
And yep, I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
We can. Thank you. So could you state your name again and your address?
Yeah, Mike Boltman at KM Engineering, 5725 North Discovery Way in Boise. I'm the civil engineer in the project, and just here for any questions. If any of the neighbors have questions about the sewer, the gravity irrigation, just here to talk through those with you guys. Going back to Jeff's question with the irrigation, we are planning to pick up the irrigation on the east side of the property and route it to the west side of the property, so we're not going to be impacting any of the gravity irrigation out there today. So what the neighbors get right now is what they're going to get in the future.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments regarding the sewer questions? There?
Oh, yes.
Yes. So there was a comment with the gentleman that came before you regarding sewer and how you're going to manage the sewer, the gravity flow.
Yeah, so currently today the site is about a 20-foot differential from the north side of the site on Stam down to Orchard. So what we're planning to do with this development is we're going to be gravity flowing everything from north to south. Taking it to a pump station on the south portion of the property, and then we're going to be force mating it back to the north, so under pressure back up to Stam, and that's due to the basalt on the site's only about 4 feet below grade, so we're really trying to limit how much we're cutting into that rock as much as we can. We can definitely provide a stub to Jeff's property on the south side. It just won't be at a depth where you can gravity flow it to the pump station.
Perfect. Thank you for addressing that. It's appreciated. Council, do you have any questions at this time? Okay, seeing none. Thank you so much. Appreciate your comments. Okay, so, and we have a lady here, and I am so sorry. Would you like to come forward and state your name and your address? And thank you for raising your hand back there. I'm so sorry.
I didn't see the sign-up sheet, sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
My name is Kathy Henshaw, and I live at 925 North 52nd Street, the east of the proposed site. Thank you for letting me speak. I oppose the Maple Leaf development, and I wanted to make tell you about the school bus, how that travels. And it travels on STAM, because I was taking my grandchildren up to the bus stop when they were living with us. And it travels from east to west. So that we had to cross the street and dodge all the traffic that was going to work. And so I just want to make that. So any children that were going to be, if that's developed, they would have to cross the street to go to Endeavor or any of the junior or high schools. And so I brought up the CCNRs in my previous letters, and I do have a copy of them, and I wanted to attach it earlier, but I didn't attach it to my letter. If you guys want to review them, I don't know.
Well, are there any points that you would like to highlight in the CCNRs?
Yes. So it's divided up into 8 lots, and so I went and did my homework, and the lots are divided up from STAM all the way to Orchard, and all the addresses I posted, put them in a little sheet here. So it goes, so that's for that. But there are some CCNRs that I wanted to bring up that. But I had a real estate friend look up the CCNRs for see if there were any for the 2 addresses that are proposed. And so he did find these. And they are valid as long as we enforce them. So I'm not sure as to why nobody else can find them.
So what we'll do, did you have another point to make besides that? What we'll do is we'll come back and readdress CCNRs when the applicant has an opportunity to close.
Sure.
So we'll ask that question and come back and readdress it.
Yeah, because it looks like there's 2 different ones, but they're the same information.
Thank you. And was there anything else? Was that the main point for you tonight?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for coming. Okay.
Pamela Teresis.
Pamela? Okay.
You're on speaker, Pamela.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much. I apologize about the inconvenience here. We live at 4903 Stand Lane, my husband and I. I want to let you know I really do appreciate the progress made from the original proposal. It definitely is so much better. I just want to highlight my main concern is the traffic. Infrastructure has not kept up with the overwhelming growth or traffic on Stand Lane. Considering everything that's going on around us, having residents living so close to grocery, retail, entertainment, I think the sidewalk and the crosswalk thing should really be looked at. I really think it's dangerous for anyone, especially children. And again, I just don't small little area can be kept as the beautiful rural type of community that it is. Thank you.
Pamela, thank you so much. We appreciate your testimony. Excuse me. At this time, we do not have anyone else signed up to testify. So is there anyone here that had intended to testify tonight that had not gotten signed up? Not seeing anyone, is there anyone online? Can you confirm, is there anyone else online that had intended?
No one.
Thank you. Now is the time for the applicant to come back and have the opportunity to address any comments that were made. And if you can come back and readdress the CCNR concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think I'll probably start with Jeff's comments. Hopefully, Mike, our engineer's testimony kind of helped to clear up a little bit of the issue with gravity sewer, the way we talked about it during PNC. And then irrigation rights are... there's a state statute that makes it pretty strict and that we have to basically adhere to the way water is currently being enjoyed by folks. So we'll make sure that that happens, and then anything that needs to be added in the DA to make sure that Jeff and the other neighbors are happy with that, we'd be happy to comply with as well. As far as the improvements along Stam Lane, we did have a traffic impact study completed as part of our initial application. It actually included more land and a lot more units, so it was about 117 units altogether. We decreased that to 54, so our impact will be a lot less impactful than it was before. I think initially our traffic engineer had said that it was about 70 peak rush hour trips, so that would probably be decreased to about 40. As far as improving property that's not in this development, I don't know how developer would feel about doing that. We'd certainly be happy to do anything on our property to accommodate what would make for safe pedestrian crossing and whatever else the city might require there. As far as Pamela's comment about traditional family homes in this area, I think most of the neighbors and the testimony that I've heard want 1 to 1.5 acre lots, which is a wonderful product, but it's also not something that our developer wants to provide to the community, and it's also not consistent with the comp plan. So it would require a comp plan amendment and something that we're not proposing tonight. So we feel that we've come to a good concession here and a compromise that hopefully will work with the community. Yeah. And the CCNR, so I don't know if, because you can bring up the image that I made, but we actually spent an afternoon looking just to make sure, because I hadn't heard of the CCNR before I read the public testimony before the last hearing. And one of the neighbors was kind enough to send over the version that she had. She's a real estate professional as well, so she looked and found the CCNRs that are applicable for the area. And it was, we had our survey team look at it to make sure that the legal description for each of the lots they described in those CCNRs and where they were applicable to. So I think it's the second last slide or something like that. But they found that it was just for parcels 1 through 4, the 1.7 acre lots, and parcels 1 through 4, 1.37 acre lots. So it's the division of lot 5 of the Orkalar Heights and a division of lot 6 of the Orkalar Heights. We also talked to our title company and made sure that there was nothing that was actually attached to our property or any CCNRs that were missed with our additional due diligence. So I don't know if maybe the gal that's here tonight could show us the CCNRs that she has. Maybe they're different, but we did a fair amount of research into it just to make sure that there wasn't something we missed. So I don't know if there's more information maybe out there that we're not aware of, but I believe we've tried to cover most of our bases there. I think that might cover everything that was brought up. Yeah, I think, I mean, in general, we're excited about this project and excited to keep working with the city. So I think we'll stand for any questions if you have any.
Thank you. And Debbie, I don't think we got the CCNRs from the lady that came forward, so maybe we could get a copy of what you were going to give us. In just a second, I'll have you bring those forward and we'll give them to the clerk. So, Council, do you have any questions for Stephanie at this time? Councilman Haverfield.
The interior road, which is a private roadway, will there be sidewalks on both sides?
Madam Mayor, Councilman Haverfield, yes. It's on, I think, on one of our site plans. I can look really quick. It's on the perimeter of both sides.
That's fine. There's just a common connectivity to Stan Lane.
Yes, and with our initial application, we actually proposed that too. I just think we haven't clearly defined it enough. So.
And then trash collection, will it be a common or per lot, or will it be a common collection area?
Madam Mayor, Commissioner, or Councilman Haverfeld, I'm not sure what the City of Nampa requires for that. I would assume as far as trash collection, can they all have their own separate, since they're separate properties, or thanks, Christy.
Mayor and Councilman Haverfeld, that is a conversation to be had with Republic Services. They have to work that out at the time of their plat layout to determine where the best access for Republic is, and then they work with them.
It just might impact your account as well, if there's a common collection area instead of individuals. So
sure.
Something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I know it's been a while.
And then the road width, the actual section, is it 25, 26 feet wide, curb to curb?
I think it's larger than that.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it's probably about 30.
Street parking, it's just a question to make sure that emergency equipment can get through the development if it's prohibited for on-street parking.
Councilman Haverfield, if it helps, at the time that they actually do the plat layout, the fire department will review all of that to make sure that it meets their standards. Right now, this is just at concept level, and so I don't know that they've dialed it into that detail quite yet.
Okay. I like to get the weeds, so I'm going to ask the question so
sure,
that you're aware
great.
Of it. Going forward, some of these smaller developments like this, quite often you see cars parked on the street both sides, and that limits emergency access through it. So as long as the width is wide enough to provide for on-street parking, or if it's prohibited by your covenants.
Thank you, Councilman Harwell. And that's something, too, I think I've seen before in other jurisdictions that they'll require red striping or no parking signs.
No parking.
Yeah, so that would be...
At least on one side.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Council, do you have any additional questions for Stephanie?
Mayor.
Yes.
Stephanie, regarding the traffic, as we heard someone was concerned about that, and I totally get it, because depending whether they're going to go out to Robinson at the end of Stan Lane, or they're going to get on the Garrity, which is a very packed area, and then what the mayor was saying about a hot signal. So when we go back to the traffic survey, as I was reading through it, was your number 70 trips per hour? I believe that's what you had said. Was that reflective of the addition of the fact that that was studied during COVID in August, which was still kind of in the major shutdown area? Was that allowing an additional 5 to 25% off that it said it could have been lower?
Sure. Madam Mayor, Councilwoman Levi, yes, that was extrapolated to accommodate for the COVID numbers. And again, it was actually for more units as well. So I think we've basically halved our number of homes, and that will help.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions at this time? Okay. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, then we could stand for a motion to close public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
What is the will of the council?
May I thank just a statement right now for council. Again, my concern is just the road frontage improvements, cross access to an attractive area, which would be the Gateway Plaza. And then circulation to the west to be able to get across the street. It would be nice if there was some way that sidewalk could be extended, but we can't mandate that. I like the development as it's been revised. The setbacks on the perimeter, the fact that they're one-story homes that are single-family homes with home ownership, the interior lots as well being townhouses with individual ownership, I think it would be a a development with the apartment park in there that would be an attractive place to live. I didn't ask, and nobody else did, as far as what the commercial use might be, but it might satisfy some of the needs so people don't have to leave the development. But I wish there was better connectivity. The bus issue raised something I hadn't even thought about. Kids have to cross over. So if there isn't some sort of a protected way to get across the street, that's going to be a potential hazard for those that are living there. Maybe in time.
Any other comments? Council?
Just Mayor, and I'm sorry, Jeff, I forgot your last name, but Jeff is the first name, correct? Anyway, what he mentioned as far as, I think I heard as far as even tiling the irrigation ditch and so on, so that's part of the DEA, the development agreement, or what needs to be done as far as including it when the motion is made, so.
So I have a question, and that really has to do with that sidewalk. I know it is county property. Can we put some type of stipulation in there to at least attempt the connectivity of the sidewalk to the apartment complex, with even though it is a county and they do not have to give right-of-way access or purchase it, but they may actually desire it to have a sidewalk across along that road for walking purposes? I think what I listen to from our citizens is that they say growth needs to fund growth. So in this case, to me, it is not the responsibility of the current landowner to put a sidewalk on their property to accommodate the growth that is going in right next to them. And so I'm just trying to think, how do you address that? Because it's very clear that our citizens are saying, let growth fund growth. And I know it's an additional cost, but is there a way to address that?
Mayor, I guess I would have to look to legal to determine whether or not we could impose that kind of a condition when it applies to properties that are outside of our jurisdiction.
Or ask the question anyway, but yeah.
Madam Mayor, I don't think the council can impose a requirement that's outside the developer's control. If it was available, as long as it's not a mandate, or a requirement that they have to have that sidewalk and have the approval of the neighbors, I think that would be inappropriate. But if the neighbors are willing, that's optional, so to speak, if the circumstances permit, but not a requirement.
Mayor, please.
Yes.
Could a crosswalk be put from the entry over to across the road? We can't put a hawk there, but there are other opportunities for a crosswalk that we see all over town. So is there an opportunity for a crosswalk without having to send people down into an area where there's not sidewalk back over? It just seems like we could probably, Daniel, I'm looking at you, if there's a crosswalk that could be put in to connect across there, not only for people wanting to access the services across the street, but the school bus.
So as for the school bus, typically the policy for the school buses are that you stay on the side of the street that you live on, and when they stop and they put the arm out, then the bus driver looks and calls the kids across. So from that perspective, I don't know that that is something that would be of concern just from the bus stop side of things. As for placing a crosswalk at that location, it's likely not a location that we would recommend a crosswalk at without some type of control on that. The developer has indicated that if those property owners would be willing, he would be willing to put in that additional sidewalk if they are willing, and or if there is room within the right-of-way. And so that's certainly something that he can attempt to talk to those property owners, and if they're willing, he would be willing to make that connection. So that's, I guess, what he would offer to to address the issue and the concern from the council.
Mayor?
Thank you. Yes?
I think I agree with Councilwoman Munchie Lee. We got to put a crosswalk. I mean, the entrance of that gateway is right there, right? Mm-hmm. So there's going to be people going to be crossing there. It's a huge development. There needs to be a crosswalk.
Mayor, Councilman Bauer, crosswalks, as a general rule, they make the pedestrians feel safer, but do not always make them safer. If a crosswalk is not utilized, if there's not a trigger for enough pedestrians actually crossing there, it tends to make the crosswalk pedestrians feel safer, but the drivers tend to ignore it when they rarely see anyone using that. Looking at this, that's likely what I would see happening in this case.
If it's not here, then where?
Well, my recommendation is crossing at the signal is the safest and best option in this situation.
Mayor, and I was going to say the same thing. Without a hawk signal for a crosswalk, we're actually taking on the liability of providing something that's meant to be a safe passage, and it's not, because there's no stopping, there's no alert signal. So the best path is down to the light there to be able to get across. And without the sidewalk, they're going to be back out walking on asphalt to try to get back into a sidewalk that's been put there at the corner. So.
So
we have to
do a sidewalk, or we have to do a crosswalk and a hawk.
The sidewalk would be the best way to go at this point.
And Mayor, Councilman Bauer, hawk signals are not inexpensive, and so they, for something of this nature, the volume of homes and the likely volume of pedestrian traffic would likely not warrant that type of expenditure.
I appreciate the fact that the developer is willing to do a sidewalk and to at least access, and it's very likely that the neighbors, I would hope, that they would be open to going ahead and allowing the sidewalk. It's kind of a pain, but I think it would create a much more safe environment.
Mayor, I'm just going to make the motion. We'll see what happens here. So
okay.
I'm going to go ahead and approve the application as stated, with the conditions of approval as stated. Also adding that the whatever needs to be done from the irrigation standpoint, that is receptive to Jeff and the other residents in the area that use the irrigation. And number two, that the question definitely is asked by the developer to the landowners in the county whether they would allow a sidewalk to the intersection, with the understanding that if they do approve that and would allow that on their property, that the developer will be responsible for it.
So did you
remove a 1E?
Yeah, 1E.
Remove
That's
the
true.
What?
And remove 1E.
Right, and remove 1E. Thank you.
Thank you.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion in council? Seeing none, roll call. Yes. Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Munchie?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
And Brunner?
Yes.
Thank you for working with the neighbors, for listening, for the redevelopment, staying single, level. As you, the backyards attached, really appreciate the redesign. Thank you.
The sky bridge would be okay too.
Thank you. Okay, let's get through this next one before we take a break. I think I see someone standing at the back of the room. Are you the applicant on 6-3?
On
6-3. So our next item is 6-3, action item. This is a zoning map amendment from RPBC, which is residential professional to community business, to community business, to allow a coffee shop. That's not new. So you've got one more to go. Okay, with the drive-through at 16th Street North. This is for Wendy Shreve, JUV, representing Thornton Gallup. Thank you. Go ahead and restate, the drill, your name and address.
All right.
Thank you.
Good evening.
name is Wendy Shreve. I'm a planner with JEB Engineers, and my business address is 2760 Excursion Way in Meridian, Idaho, 83712. I'm here this evening with what's essentially kind of a little bit of housekeeping. My applicant, who has already gone through design review with the project and worked with planning and engineering, we have a approximately 0.89 acre parcel where we have split zoning. We have both RP and BC zoning for the parcel, and we would like to make sure that the entire parcel is zoned BC for community business. The comprehensive plan designate, or the new zoning we're requesting, meets the underlying comprehensive plan. And we are well in the process for design for the site, but we do need to make sure we have the same zoning across this parcel. We are immediately contiguous to property to the north with the community business designation and another property to the west. We are planning a future coffee shop here in this location, so I think it'll be a great asset for the community and an investment here in the city of Tampa. So I'm here for any questions.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions at this time? We'll have you back,
okay,
and we may have a question at that time. Thank you so much, Wendy. Staff report.
Thank you, Mayor. I was ready for her to give my entire presentation. As Wendy has stated, the point of this is to kind of clean up the zoning where the parcel is split zoned currently to make the entire parcel BC zone. So the surrounding land uses: to the north is a gas station, to the east are apartments, south there's a mix of residential and commercial uses, and then to the west is also another gas station. History: May of this year, Planning and Zoning approved the recommended approval of the rezone with all the conditions of staff. June of this year, design review was completed and approved. I won't go over that, as when you gone over the future land use, they will be stretching it community mixed use to cover this parcel. Utilities are all available and have adequate capacity. They have provided a queuing plan for the drive-through that's in your packing. Here's a concept plan. This is what was submitted for design review and was approved. Here's the site plan. The BC zone, this is a permitted use in the BC zone. There's a large variety of uses. If they wish to not develop this and go a different route, and those uses are provided in the staff report. 10 through 5 is our split zoning code, where it dictates that if a lot is split zone, then the more restrictive zone applies for the entire development. So that's the reason for requesting to rezone here. The conclusions of law, I won't cover those. Those are in your staff report as well. As far as staff analysis, it's in the public interest. Increasing the amount of retail along corridors is reported as supported by the comprehensive plan and can be a benefit. Surrounding land uses would support the zoning change and incoming business. There could be concern for overflow for the drive-through, but the queuing plan seems to resolve any concerns there. As far as the zoning, split zoned, as I have indicated, this would solve that issue. Correspondence, typical correspondence from engineering here. All the right of way exists. They looked over the queuing plan, and there wasn't any concern for as far as traffic there. These are the recommended conditions and any that you would like to add to that. And here's a potential motion for you. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Parker. Are there any questions at this time? Okay, we may be back with questions. Thank you. So this is a public hearing. We have a few people that are signed up. And Debbie, I'll let you go through those names.
Callie Huff.
Oh, hi, this is Kelly. I'm just part of the development team. I have no questions, but thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Mike Boltman.
Is Mike part of the team also? Okay.
And then Wendy, and then I have a Craig Evert.
I'm Craig Evert. I own the property adjacent to the proposed zoning.
Would you like?
Should I come up?
Yes, please, if you don't mind. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Anyway, I own the property next to the proposed Starbucks, and I'm strongly in favor of the rezoning.
Great. Thank you so much for being here. And I believe we have your address listed. Debbie, you've got it?
Yep.
11 6th Street.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So you gave away the name. Well, I was guessing. There you go. Thank you.
And that's all.
Okay. That's all we have signed up at this time. Is there anyone here or online that had intended to testify? Do we have any guests online?
No.
No? Okay. With that, this would be an opportunity for the applicant to come back forward and any additional questions. Do we have any questions for the applicant or for Parker?
Mary Quinn.
Yes.
I do.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy.
There's a portion of the property that's being left available either for future expansion or for, I guess, grass area there on the other side. That would be on the west side. That big area there, yeah. So is that planned for a future expansion, or do you know?
Councilman Harfield, that there are no plans for that parcel at this time.
All right, thank you.
Or for the future.
For expansion. Just thinking as far as the parking requirement, circulation obviously would be what it is, but there is potential there, if the setbacks are met, that there could be an expansion in this building. So that would be the only question.
I don't think having a buffer is a bad thing to have that room, but it's not that is my
that's not planned. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you so much. I would stand for a motion to close public testimony.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
What is the will of the council?
Mayor, I'll make a motion to approve the zoning map amendment from
RPDC to BC to allow a coffee shop with a drive through. 16th Street North, also addressed as 36th Street North, a 0.89 county parcel. With all conditions of approval, conditions aligned.
Mm-hmm. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Roll call.
Bruner?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Muchie.
Yes.
There you go. That is an excellent use for that.
Yes, it is.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So how soon can my wife drive through and get a cup of coffee?
And it will be a Starbucks.
How soon are you going to have it?
I'm probably hoping for the next year. So.
I hope your neighbor gets the first cup.
Yes. Yes, that is great.
People walk over the crate.
Yeah. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's great, and we need that exit off the freeway with the new exchange. It's perfect. Okay, item 6.4 is an action item. This is a variance of section 10-8-6, requiring a 20-foot yard setback in order to construct a patio cover and carport at a reduced front yard setback of up to 0 from the front property line. This is in an RS6 zoning district at 624 7th Avenue North for Jerry Vizemar. Did I say that correctly? Probably not. Okay. Jerry, thank you for waiting. Go ahead and share your name again and your address.
Okay. My name is Jerry Visner, and I reside at 624 7th Avenue North. And this is actually a duplex. I occupy the bottom floor, and the top is rented. And so what we're trying to accomplish here is because upstairs and downstairs, neither one has a cover over the steps. And so, for instance, a safety issue, and my wife is a little older and she needs that, protection. So our request is to go up to the property line and also to provide a covered carport as well. So that's what we're proposing and hoping to accomplish.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay, so we do have the pictures up here. Thank you. So I'll tell you what, as you just watched, it is a public hearing. I think we'll have staff come and do their report, and then we'll let you come back and answer any questions that we might have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Parker.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I think the variance request can be summed up from this picture here quite easily. So as you can see, the property line in the front extends here, and it cuts through the staircase, actually. So the house sits right up close to that property line. So the applicant, as he stated, wants to cover those stairs with a structure, so that will be within that 20-foot required setback. It's surrounded all by single-family homes. The lot behind it was approved for a duplex here this year. Some history. This lot was approved for a duplex in 2007. No issued permit there. In 2017, a building permit was issued to convert the basement to a separate dwelling unit. Included in those approved plans was a carport, as well as the staircase that was leading to the basement that extended outside the property lines. And that appears to be an error that we're trying to correct now with this variance. As part of the planning and final inspection, a condition of occupancy was added that they complete the carport for the renter, as well as a garage for the owner occupied unit. And neither of those were constructed. In February 2018, CUP for the duplex was approved for that building. In 2019, Occupy was permitted. No garage or carport were constructed at that time. To March this year, the owner applied for a building permit to construct what he's presented today. The permit is on hold until we solve this request. Here is the site plan showing the property line in red, the home here. This is the carport that was on the original building permit, circled there. As you can see, the staircase goes up past the property line. Here's a image of the front of the home. Red line is the property line. Red line is the property line here. This 1086C is the code requiring the 20-foot setback. There's some exceptions to it where if homes on the street adjacent to it sit closer to the property line than the 20 feet, that the home can extend within the 20 feet, but cannot sit closer than 15 feet to the property line. Variance, applicable regulation, they need to show undue hardship. Purpose of variance is to provide fair treatment. Individuals aren't penalized for the site characteristics beyond their control. Regulations, I won't cover these. You are familiar with those. Correspondence, building departments require a regulation, the Title IV building regulations. They also stated that they would need to meet fire code. The fire rating of that structure would have to meet code. They also stated that the structure would not be able to extend outside of the property line. So as we've seen, the stairs extend outside of the property line, so the structure wouldn't be able to cover the last step of that staircase. Engineering stated that the carport cannot be built over the utility line, but they would be open to an encroachment agreement to extend within the build within the easement. As far as the hardship, it does sit within the 20-foot setback. The stairs were permitted to be built outside of the property line, and An encroachment agreement was secured at the time for that staircase intrusion, though a variance was never approved for that. Being in the R6 zone, the lot is large enough for a duplex. It does sit closer to the front property line than some other homes would. As far as homes in these older parts of town, most sit closer to the property line than 20 feet, so this is a common thing to have variances come up for these homes. As far as health and safety, the structure wouldn't cover the last step, which seems contradictory to the safety, but the building department wouldn't permit that structure to cover the last step outside of the property. So, I've included some measurements. The front property line is about 26 feet from the back of the curb, so most of that is right away. Staircase extends 7 inches beyond the property line. Home is about 30 feet from the back of the curb. And it's about the front wall of the home is about 4 feet from the property line. The variance is also for the carport, which was never built, for that to be built in the same front plane as the home currently is. So it wouldn't sit closer to the property line than the home is. It would have to be meet or be behind the home. The conditions of approval are those in the staff report. I think I've covered most of those. And here's a potential motion for you, and I will stand for any questions.
Thank you, Parker. Are there any questions for Parker? Councilman Haverfield.
Okay, I always have a question. There's a photograph in our packet of the front of the house. Can you go to that? Just trying to understand what they're hoping to accomplish. Right now, there's a cover over the front door. So they're wanting to put a cover over this sidewalk to the left of the front door. Is that what?
I believe the cover, Councilman, would cover both sets of stairs. Sorry, this
okay,
one.
So currently, there's one that's covered. So that would be rebuilt, possibly. I don't know. But so the roof slope would be directed to the two sides, just like the current roof slope is, correct? So you're not contributing water into the right of way.
Correct.
Okay. And then the carport structure would be built to the left side of the photograph?
It would be up to the left side. Mm-hmm.
And that would not be any further forward than the front of the current house?
Correct.
So it's in non-compliance at this point, but it's an existing condition. So all they're asking for is the ability to cover that one little portion of stair, in a sense, because the other side's already covered.
The variance is to cover the majority of the stairs except for the last step of the staircase.
As long as the eave can't extend beyond the property.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Parker. So this is a public hearing, and we do not have anyone other than the applicant that has signed up to testify. Is there anyone here that had intended to, or online? Seeing no one, this is an opportunity for the applicant to come and present any additional information or for counsel to ask the applicant any questions. Are there any questions for our applicant or for Parker? I don't think we have any other questions.
Okay,
I would stand for a motion to close public hearing.
Moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
What is the will of the council?
Mayor, I'll make a motion to approve the variance of Section 8.10.8.6 requiring 20-foot front setback.
With conditions
of approval for Gary Wisner.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Bruner?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mucci?
Yes.
It was a long time to wait for that, but you got it done. So now you can accomplish what you were wanting to. Thank you so much for your patience. And, you know, Council, I'm going to see if we can just push through and so we can get done. So we're going to move to item 6.5 on the agenda. This is an action item. This is a variance of Section 10-1-8.D.1.
limiting a residential fence height to 6 feet on the perimeter of the backyard. This is to allow a vinyl fence extension of an additional 18 to 20 inches to provide privacy from the neighboring property, which sits at a higher elevation in RS6 single family residential area. This is at 4453 South Haber Way at Lava Springs subdivision for James and Charlene Moss. And are you James?
Well, no, I am.
Okay, so our applicant is here. Thank you. So, and then is your address the 4453?
Correct, 4453 South Haber Way here in Nampa.
Thank you.
Good evening. We're here to ask for variance for the fence extension. A little history. We moved into the Long Springs development. We bought our lot in 2018. At the time, there was only three other homes on our street. So when we had the house built, we had a vinyl fencing 6 foot enclosing our property. There was a house to the rear that had a current fence, so we matched that fence. In November, December of 2020, the lot directly to the south of us, which is the front of our home is actually set back off of the roadway. And you can see in the upper right-hand corner, part of our backyard aligns the new house that was built in 2020. When that house was being built, we noticed that the foundation appeared to be higher than ours. You know, we thought it was an optical illusion. We waited once the house got built, and that back corner that you can see of the house is their patio. We realized that the house is about 2 feet higher than our house. So you can see by the photo that the slope, the grade, the house does sit higher. So we did a little comparison of our property fence line. I had my son and myself, we stood on their patio. My son's about 5'8", 5'9". My wife, who's about 5'4", was in our side yard, and we were able to see, she was able to see us from the waist up, extending over our original 6 foot fence. You can kind of see in the picture that's in the middle, part of the construction that I started, I took a photograph to show that door that you see there. That's a construction door, but that door is my neighbor's bedroom. It goes right out onto their patio. It is currently a clear glass door. So while standing in our side yard, we have a clear view of our neighbor's bedroom and their patio. I did not do any research for the city council or on the code. Previous cities that I've lived in have allowed fence extensions, so I just went ahead and contacted a local company. They informed me how to extend the fence, and I extended the fence. The reason why I did it, for privacy. The fence that we currently have on our other side of our house and the back of our house allows us the typical standard privacy you would expect with a 6 foot fence. This current 6 foot fence, due to the change in height of our properties, does not allow us that same expectation of privacy that we have with the other 6 foot fences. That fence extension that I put is approximately 18 to 20 inches. We did a bunch of comparison, and that was the height that we felt gave us that expectation of privacy that was equal to the other 6 foot fences.
So if I think I understand you correctly, you've already done it. You're just now needing to get permission to have done it. You found out afterwards that you needed a variance. Is that right?
Correct. We got our HOA, we were told, turn this in to code compliance. Code compliance came by and knocked on our door, and that's when we realized that we were in violation of the city code. Okay. So they walked us through, told us how we can apply for an exemption or variance.
Thank you. Thanks.
So while you were here.
Yes.
Question, was your HOA unhappy with you with this extension?
So our HOA...
they turned you in, I'm guessing they are.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm guessing they are if they turned you in.
Cool. Well, that's what we were told, but I've been told by my HOA president and vice president that they're in favor of this. I have a lot of neighbors who are all, they love the way the look of it is and the privacy, because there's, in our development, there's a lot of homes that are all off different heights. So there's a lot of privacy issues when you're on your patio. I've had a lot of neighbors come by and ask me if I can do it for them. I said, well, no, I can't, because it's not allowed.
So Mayor, if I may, my main interest is your neighbor that you did this because, to give them actually a little more privacy, too. So are they happy with this?
So they are. As a matter of fact, they just moved in a month and a half ago.
Okay.
And they were getting ready to run a fence down that property line, coming this direction, because that's their property. And I told them, no, you can't go that tall. So I informed them of what happened. So they're all in favor. They appreciate that I did it.
And they may come in for a variance?
We might well see them in for a variance also.
I was going to say, we may need to address this to where not every single person needs to come in. In fact, we should authorize staff so it doesn't have to come before City Council.
Totally agree.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Rodney, how fast can you make this staff report?
Like 2.5 minutes.
Or one. just keep it short. I don't know that we,
All right, I'm not going to go over it. There was the location. I think you're all familiar with the location of that subdivision. Comprehensive plan, it fits there. There's an aerial view of the property, and I think the one to the south is the one that was recently constructed. Correct. There's the condition, 72 inches is the max height in a residential zone. You need to show a new hardship. So just quickly, variances are intended to not be for a special exception. So you don't want to come in, you don't want to grant variances for special situations just because they're asking, right? There has to you have to show some kind of condition that makes it not fair to them. And that's a really, really high level perspective on variances, but it's not intended for just anybody who comes in to grant a variance. However, the conditions in this situation, a greater elevation of the property next door, is a pretty good case for those conditions that would warrant a variance. So no impact or comment from correspondence from anyone. I outlined that I felt like the potential hardship is there. It's up to you to decide, of course. Recommended conditions, 92 inches in height. And then last of all, I just wanted to say that to your last comment, that staff already did make changes to the code as proposed in our workshop. And so once that code amendment goes through, these kind of situations, specifically this one, would not have come to City Council once this goes through. So we're ready to go. As soon as that goes through and gets adopted, you won't see these kinds.
And how long before that's adopted, though?
I have a meeting with the Building Contractors Association tomorrow. So I was really happy to get that meeting with them. And that's the only thing that's holding us back now. So I've scheduled it. I don't remember the exact date, but I think it's in I think it's in August that we've scheduled that meeting for. So
perfect.
That first meeting, which is planning and zoning, then we'll go back to City Council right after.
Mayor?
It's awesome. Thank you, Rodney. Yes?
Just a question. It had a retaining wall been built underneath the fence and the fence built on top of it to gain the same height, would we even be having this conversation?
We would. A retaining wall, if you looked closely at the pictures, you could see that it's not actually retaining any ground here. It's just that the slope of the property goes up to the building.
But if they would have built a retaining wall
to
basically balance it out, could they have built a fence on top of it of 6 feet without any issues?
It depends. If a property next door is higher,
right,
and they pull the permit currently, they could build a 6 foot fence.
So it has to be the neighbor pulling the permit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh,
all right,
got it.
That makes sense.
Any other questions for Rodney? Rodney, thank you. That was quick. Good job. Okay, this is a public hearing, and I don't see that anyone has signed up to testify in support of or in opposition to. Is there anyone here that had intended to testify? Or anyone online? Seeing no one, this is an opportunity for the applicant to say anything, last comments, or council to ask any questions. I don't see anything. I would stand for a motion to close public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
What is the will of the council?
Mayor, I move to approve the variance to section 10-1-8B1, limiting a residential fence height to 8 to 6 feet on the perimeter of the backyard at 4453 South Gabbro Way for James and Charlie Moss with all proposed conditions in the staff report.
Okay.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Roll call.
Bruner?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mucci?
Yes.
And thank you for your patience tonight. You had to sit through all of this to get there. But now you're official. Yes.
I need some fence improvement. Are you out for hire?
He did a good job.
Good for you. Thank you. You can take a quick break. I'm just going to keep going because it'd be nice to go ahead and get done this evening. So, actually, the next item on the agenda is our staff report. Jeff, thank you. Do you guys, do we need a break? Because we've only got a couple of action items left. We're almost done.
Oh, man.
This side said, let's hang in there.
Who just whined?
Okay, Jeff, you're on.
Mayor, City Council, a brief update from the Public Works Department. I just want to tell you that we're having a successful chip seal program this year. And has anyone seen a bad chip seal before?
Let me hit the windshield.
I think that we saw one in a county next door to us.
Maybe. And actually, a few years ago, we hired a company to come in and do chip seal, and it was a mess. And so I remember cars tracking into their driveway, oil onto their driveway. I remember kids having on their shoes walking in the front door. A bus let out one time, and the traffic control folks out there let them walk across the road. So we've seen a bad chip seal. I just want to highlight what a really good one looks like, and that's our street park. So I'm not just saying this. They are really good at what they're doing, and they have tweaked the process so it is very clean. We didn't get another claim for a cracked engine this year. So, so we're doing arterials and subdivisions. We added the subdivisions after that project I was referring to. We said we need to have better quality control, so we asked the streets department to do residential neighborhoods too. And that was 3 years ago. So the residential neighborhoods is awesome, and we go through it. So just quick chip seal process. First, that they're doing the crack seal. If you can see that on the left, and then you see how they put a cover over the existing castings down on the street to protect those. The oil application and chip seal. Sean runs the chipper, stayed 4 hours one night, and tweaked it again. So they have 25% of the rock or less. So it almost looks like finished product without even sweeping out. So there's some of the handwork, the compaction and sweeping. And the fog coat is next, and that will be coming over the next month, and then we'll start striping the 3 weeks after that. So you see the quality of the finished product looks really good. And there's been communities who have gotten rid of chip seal because it's just a mess. But the way they do it, people are actually requesting it in the neighborhoods now. Then the mayor came out this year, so thank you, Mayor, for your support. You got up on the chipper. I'm sure they asked you to drive. The thing too, they always try to talk me into that, but
I don't think they didn't offer. I didn't think they did.
And then I just want to give a quick highlight about our transportation funding. So that's kind of the good. The challenge we're still dealing with, but we've made some progress. There was a $17 million per year funding deficit. That's when we finished the transportation master plan. And a $200 million unfunded maintenance backlog. A huge issue, the city. But we are making progress. So quickly, two focus areas, local, and that's our FY19 funding plan that we proposed, where we had before the council, and we're still working that. And also there's a state part of that, and we're looking at road levy adjustments, gas tax adjustments, and state transportation dollars. All of that we're seeing momentum on a regional and a statewide. This is the progress since FY19. We had a six-time impact fee increase. Thank you for your support through that. That has been huge. We are leveraging that impact fee dollars to build intersections right now. I want to get intersections done first, and we'll start to widen the roads out.
the 1% property tax in FY19. We appreciate that too. That is part of the plan. And then we went after the registration fee, if you can remember that. It was a lot of work. I'm counting it up as progress too. We got to know a lot of the different cities in Canyon County. All the cities are in the same situation. They just don't know it. Their downtowns are falling apart, and there's no transportation funding. And that's what it's like statewide too. So on this, we're just giving you the next phase. Where we're at right now is the 1% increase, which is what we're requesting again. So we keep the local progress going. The GO bond reallocation is coming up in 2024 and 25. And then we're going to be hitting this year statewide adjustments to the allocation of money. So AIC, we spoke at AIC, Tom and I did. There are several cities there that heard it. We're meeting with AIC as a group of cities statewide, and we're going to make progress on adjusting the distribution of transportation money. And it'll change NAMPA if we get this adjusted. There's some streets in NAMPA that haven't seen work in 30 years, and that's true across the state. While the highway districts and the state have much, much better asphalt and roadway maintenance. So this is our goal, and you probably remember this this graph. We're still using it. So with that, stand for any questions. I want to mention Holly Street in front of NNU. One of the plans will go from 4 lanes to 3 lanes. We're going to start a public outreach, a survey starting on Monday. It's going to open for 2 weeks, and we'll get more input from the people in that area and the community. So we'll have that information back to you.
So, Mayor, if I may. So, Jeff, are you hearing? I mean, we're hearing from a federal standpoint, of course, this infrastructure, and if that ever gets through. So, do you have any idea, a hearsay or whatever rumors, what that would mean for municipalities if that whatever trillion, how many trillion that is, actually passes?
Yeah, and it depends on how it's distributed. But right now, we'll get the short end of the stick on how distribution goes through the state and funnels down to the cities. So I think we would get dollars from that.
So it'd go to state first, and the state, then and then counties, and then we decide how that money's distributed.
Yeah. So to give you an idea, Councilman, $512 million comes into the state. The city split $12 million. So $512 million comes in the state. The city split $12 million right now for the highway distribution. So it's antiquated.
So have we talked to our state senators and all about this?
We have had involvement with our state senators, and we're getting back into that. So
we will continue. I will say, Jeff, you've done a phenomenal job. You know, as I was sitting here thinking, as mayor, you're also the city manager, right? The administrator, whatever. You need to do it. And what I'm sitting here thinking is, lead and get out of the way, because we've got a great team, right? And that's my job, is to leave it, get out of the way, and let these guys go, because Jeff's doing a phenomenal job. And actually, I think we're leading the state when it comes to a new look at how we fund transportation across the state of Idaho. And so, great job, Jeff. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, so we're ready for item 5.5 on the agenda. This is an action item, and this is to authorize the mayor to sign the contract in the amount of $199,980 with Garland DVS for roof replacement at the Fleet Services Building. This is going to be a budget amendment because it's a little bit out of budget, and it was reviewed by legal. So, are there any? We can let Patrick talk to us about it. Are there questions for Patrick?
Yes, I have a couple questions. Local applicator?
This is a payback contract off an Omnia popular purchasing contract.
Right. So who's going to be the installer?
Roman Brooks. It was competitively bid by Garland.
And Roman's local?
Roman's local. We have two responsive local bids. Roman was a little bit.
Okay. And I'm sorry, is this a modified roof?
What type of roof is it? No, it's a TPO roof.
Oh, it is. Okay. Does it include insulation then?
It does. It's taking it all down, going it all the way down to the roof deck. The contingency that you see above and beyond the contract is for roof replacement. The roof is 36 years old. We've had numerous leaks over the years and been patching it for many years since I've been here.
Okay.
And And so it's stayed all the way down, and we're hoping there's not a ton of wood deck to replace, but we think that might be about 10%.
And the pricing includes bonding insurance?
Yes, any product over $50,000 would require bondage based on state statute.
Mayor, I make a motion to approve this request this evening as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion?
Mayor, question. So no local bidders as far as came across as far as with bids on this?
Mayor, Councilman Brunner, Garland is a national company, and
I understand.
We access them, and they solicited local bids with two responsive bidders in the area, and Roman Roofs was the lowest responsive.
And just process-wise, go ahead.
Could I explain? So I feel a little bit responsible for this. So the first time this came through, I asked those exact questions. I was very concerned about going with a national contractor, and I asked us to rebid it local and separate it out, and it didn't work. And we didn't end up, actually the bids came back higher from the subcontractor. I think I'm remembering this correctly, but the very thing I was hoping to accomplish by going local and not going national actually ended up costing us more money. So then we had to go back, and overall the project is now more expensive because of the time delay. And what we have are the people that we would have wanted to bid local are working through the national company. And so it is a piggyback bid off of a national bid, and we tried that, but it actually worked against us in this particular case.
Is this a formula where that you think we're going to be using ongoing?
Well,
process
Mayor and Councilman Brunner, we used this in 2019 for the replacement of the Family Justice Center roof and all the HVAC equipment. It was very successful. We ended up getting some just cost estimates preliminarily, and that's the first time we've used Garland for that. I think that we would use them primarily just for roofing, since that's all they do. And we also use feedback contracts also for cubicle furniture, things off the state contract. So it would be really limited to this type of project.
So bottom line, how Garland is making their money is just quantity. They're doing projects all over the place. So that's why they're cheaper than a local who's not, where they're hiring subcontractors rather than...
Right, and most of the school roofs that you see in the Treasure Valley, a large percentage of those are being performed by Garland.
Okay.
As well.
All right, thanks.
Yes.
Sorry, I forgot to ask, as far as, was there an abatement study, an asbestos study on the roof? Was there any mastics or anything?
Yes, we looked at that, and there's just a little bit in the mastic, and that's included in the
bid. That's accounted for?
Yeah, it's outside, so basically they just have to wet it, scrape it, and bag it, and mark it.
And the price includes the trip to a landfill with the product. So we don't have to worry about that.
This is an all-inclusive design and construction contract. It covers everything with a guaranteed not-to-exceed cost.
Okay.
So if there's anything above and beyond other than the allowance that we have in there for a unit price or deck replacement, they're going to cover any other overages.
Okay.
There was any further? There was a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Muchie?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you very much.
Item 5.6 is an action item. This is authorizing staff to distribute $155,207.66 for wastewater connection fees, GL to Title I, to cover the uncollected Birch Lake Commerce fees for 370 new homes built between the spring of 2018 and April of 2021.
So moved, Mayor. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion?
A question there. So if I may, Daniel. So where in your mind had the Houghtons come up with $800,000 to $1 million reimbursement?
Mayor, Councilman Brunner, that is the 155 is just the uncollected fees that we should have collected between that period that the software didn't populate. The Houghtons numbers of what they are owed for the entire, or what their account balance is for their portion of the late comers, includes that 350-ish original principal, and then they have the 9% interest over that time period since 2006 when the agreement went in.
So they have been getting on an ongoing basis some reimbursement. And this is, but is this is the final?
No, this is a totally separate issue, and so this is a totally separate motion.
So
I'm off base,
okay.
Yeah. So I think we should stay strictly to this particular action item.
So that's an ongoing...
We are still researching some of the information council requests.
Fine, I will condemn my discussion, and thank you.
Perfect, thank you. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, roll call.
Bruner?
Yes.
Mucci?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Item 5.7 and 5.8 are the first reading of ordinance for annexation of property into the Municipal Irrigation District of the City of Nampa for real properties listed in Exhibit A, and direct the city engineer to alter the use and map area accordingly. And it is item 5.8 is to authorize the summary of publication for the preceding ordinance, and it is requested to pass under suspension of rules with the summary.
An ordinance of the City of Nampa, Canyon County, Idaho, annexing a portion of the underlying irrigation district in the Municipal Irrigation District of the City of Nampa, County of Canyon, State of Idaho, and the changing the boundaries thereof, and directing the city engineer to alter the use and area map accordingly.
So moved, Mayor, as read, with suspension of rules and publication.
Second. Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mucci?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Item 5.9 is an action item to authorize the mayor to sign a resolution to adopt the post-construction stormwater management plan and O&M agreement, which has been reviewed and approved by legal.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mucci?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Item 5.10 is an action item to authorize the engineering staff to proceed with negotiations for right-of-way acquisition for Kings Road and Victory Road roundabout project, and authorize the mayor to sign a right-of-way acquisition contract up to the estimated amount of $750,000. This is approved in the FY21 budget.
So moved.
Second.
They were just waiting for you to stand up. Is there any further discussion or any discussion? Roll call.
Mucci?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Is this by Jean's house?
It can all be by my house. I'm dead with a quarter.
We got a cheers in the paper on this one.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
It's always great to get a cheers in the newspaper. I didn't see that. Thank you. That's great. Item 5.11 is an action item. This is for council to award the bid and authorize the mayor to sign a contract for Midland Boulevard and Greenhurst Road turn lanes project with Idaho Materials and Construction in the amount of $285,457.84, and it is approved in the FY21 budget.
Mayor, question, if I may, Daniel. So this is also one of the recommendations by Jeff and his team as far as for a roundabout eventually, right?
Eventually, we...
So this is just to get us by, or I guess I'm just talking about money as far as doing something now, and this is not going to affect the cost of the roundabout, and are we...
No, Mayor, Councilman Bruner, this is a interim solution. The full intersection improvements at this intersection are a ways out. With the additional development that we've seen out there, we've seen the need for this, and so... That's why this.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Roll call.
Seems that it's not around that.
Yeah. Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mucci?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
And that the public hearings are finished. The next item is unfinished business, and we have no items there. And then Section 8 are pending ordinances that are noted just for future reference. And at that, I believe we have completed the regular portion, if I can talk, of our meeting. And I would ask for a motion to adjourn into executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 742061 1J, to consider labor contract matters authorized under Section 742061. 1F, to communicate with legal counsel for the public agency to discuss legal ramifications of and legal options for pending litigation or controversies not yet to be litigated, but imminently likely to be litigated. Oh, it's hard to go through them all. And then 1C, to consider acquiring an interest in real property not owned by the public agency. It's been moved and seconded. Roll call.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Bruner?
Yes.
Levi?
Yes.
Bauer?
Yes.
Haverfield?
Yes.
Muchie?
Yes.
And for those present, we do not make any decisions in executive session. I would anticipate you not need to stay. To come back, we want to come back and you will be done. We will adjourn afterwards, though. So thank you for joining us this evening. And for council, this is an opportunity to take a bathroom break and we'll